Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking with Aaron Gill, Western Pennsylvania Coordinator for the Pennsylvania Health Healthcare Access Network. Did you get that in there? Lori Walling from Public Citizen Global Trade Watch is going to be here also to talk about the regulations that are killing our trade. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So, Jake, how was your weekend?
Pretty good.
Just pretty good?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm average weekend.
Glad to be here?
Absolutely.
All righty. So, good. Did you see the big story about the Queen?
You'd have to be more specific.
The Queen of England. See the big story about the Queen of England?
I guess I missed it.
Evidently, the Queen is going to be put on a budget. They're tightening the drawstrings. The Queen of England, well, she's going to have to cut down on the big parties, and maybe the roof of her palace isn't going to be repaired this year because they've passed legislation in England. You know, austerity, got to make sure that the bigwigs there suffer a little bit as well. They're going to... take away a little bit of her allowance.
So I guess my question is that Great Britain's share of the sacrifice that the UA countries are going to have to make? Apparently so.
Well, we shall see. Now, you know where this is going to go. You know, all of the tourist traps, all of the tourist attractions, prices are going to go up. They're going to, and I'm waiting for the reality series, you know, QE2, Queen 3, whatever. I'm waiting for the, you know, all of the reality nonsense to go on. Catch the Monarch. I don't know. Something like that. So there you go. Good times coming for all there. Now, they're saying that, you know, it all depends on how the Queen, the Crown's estate, how their trading performance goes. We shall see. But it's good to see that at least their investor class, their wealth class, going to have to crimp back just a little bit. The money that they were talking about were, you know, they're talking almost half from the, you know, from their high water mark of the early 90s. They're getting about half of what they were getting from the country there. And now what's going on is, well, you know, maybe the Queen's going to have to wear that dress a second time. Heaven forbid. Here in the U.S., the attack on the poor and working class continues. Last week, we talked a little bit about the drop in the, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, the drop in the share of income that goes to, well, us. The share of the national pie that goes towards wages dropped, and dropped significantly, down to 51% of the share of the nation's wealth, down from just 10 years ago, down from 65%. And I love when my teabagger friends say, well, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. Damn right I am. Let's go back to just 2000, where we were getting 65% of that money spread around to all of us. Now you're seeing just 57%. That is a huge amount. For the second year in a row, we are seeing median incomes dropping. Second year in a row. Also seeing, second year in a row, dollar per productivity per worker rising. So now remember what the Republicans tell you. You got a meritocracy. Pay for performance. So the CEOs and the bankers who crashed our economy, they're getting massive bonuses. They're getting huge paydays, paying capital gains tax of 15%, and pocketing the vast sum of their money. You who go to work every day, busting your behind, being more productive than you were for the last 2 years in a row, you have seen your wages decline. I'm kind of missing the meritocracy. I'm kind of missing the pay for performance. I'm kind of missing that. And just the other day, I heard, on the floor of Congress, the guy saying, well, we need to be paying people to be more productive. Hello? 2 years in a row, higher productivity. 2 years in a row, less wages. That, my friends, is called redistribution of wealth. And the sad reality is they've got us trained to thinking, well, 9 out of 10 of us, and this plays into the hands of big business, well, all business, really, 9 out of 10 of us in the last survey taken on this think that next year's salary increase, if any, will be less than what it costs in the raise of cost of food and fuel. We don't think the raises are going to cover our costs, if we get raises at all. And the bosses are happy about that. Because you're already expecting not to get a raise. You're already expecting not to ask for one. And now you look at this new report out from the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and surprise, surprise, globally we've got income inequality. And guess where where one of the countries that it's greatest? Right here. There's Mexico, there's Turkey, and then there's us. I guess if you're one of those people who need to feel positive about being number one for something, there you go. We're number one at being one of the most unequal countries on the planet. Now, understand, and don't get me wrong, being one of the most unequal countries in the world, this is still a much better place, in my opinion, to live than anywhere else. I think it could be better. I think if we had laws that encouraged workers to collectively bargain, like my grandparents' generation had, we would reap some of that gain. It wouldn't be 57% of the pie going to wages. It would be back up to 65 or maybe even 75, 78 like it used to be. See, when we had a broad-based economy full of middle-class people who were consumers and kept the engine going, and remember that? I'm sure you do. But you're seeing this gap between the richest and the poorest increasing at a gap significantly worse than it was in 1980. So we've been going down the wrong path. In fact, they say the gap between rich and poor is widening across most developed economies as skilled workers reap the majority of rewards and top executives and bankers benefit from the global market. The average income of the richest tenth of the population is about 9 times that of the poorest tenth. So you're seeing that gap just open wide up. And you look at these poorer countries, they're getting screwed. And understand, much like the poorer countries, our poorer states are getting screwed as well. And there was a report that came out from the European Network on Debt and Development. And surprise, surprise, big multinational corporations screwed little countries out of taxes. Are you surprised? In fact, they're saying annually, on a yearly basis, they're talking about $500 billion corporate America is pocketing where they should be paying into places where they do business in taxes, where they are using the roads, the infrastructure, the education, they're using the natural resources, they're using the whole thing. And what's going on is they've gotten away with it because, we need to be more business friendly. We need to be more business friendly, right? We need a tax code that's friendlier. And I look at our stat of the week, and this is going to stick in my head all day long. Understand, I've been throwing out that stat that they said from 1979 to 2007, the top 1% pocketed after tax increase of about 275%. You and I saw an increase of about 40%, middle-class people, about 40%. Those at the bottom, like 18%. Not even enough to keep up with any type of inflation. That money's all been evaporated. Those at the very top, doing really well. What the stat of the day is if the average American family today were to receive the same share of the national income that the average household took in 1980, you know, just before Ronald Reagan came in on the, with the attack, this guy, Nick Hauner, he has pointed out, and this guy's really a big-name veteran venture capitalist. He's come out and said, look, if that were the case, if we had the income distribution we had back in 1980, the average family in this country today would have $13,000 more in income. I mean, stop and think about that. $13,000, if you make $50,000 a year, you're talking about an extra $13,000 in your paycheck. What do you think that could do for the economy? Now, this guy was one of the original investors in Amazon, a real capitalist. He understands that if the only people who buy from Amazon are people with money. If you have money in your pocket, it spurs growth because people are buying things. And this is what the guy's saying. Look, we need to go back and start taxing people at a reasonable, rational rate so that we get money into the hands of consumers so that capitalists like him and entrepreneurs like the people who started Amazon and all these other businesses have something called customers. And those customers have demands. And the capitalist or the entrepreneur feed those demands when people have money. You know, I get a kick out of these people who say, well, you know, government regulation, that's what's killing me. I can't grow my business because I got those government regulations. And you go, really? Regulations killing your business? What about not having any customers? What about having a revenue? I got to be honest, you know, with our business here, regulations aren't burdensome to me whatsoever. You follow the FCC rules. You follow the rules of running any type of business. My problem is customers. You know, we need advertisers. That's the problem. We need guests for our program. We need to keep. That's how you grow a business. Now, this idea that somehow the regulations just killing us. I'm not getting it. But it's a nice talking point, and it's been well tested. It's been well scripted. You know, think tank. Think tank tested, focus group approved. So there you go. At the end of this, though, it's not about regulation. It's about demand. And you look at the latest unemployment numbers that have come out, unemployment's getting a little bit better. But like I talked about last week, the study from the National Bureau of Economic Research, you know, a 1 percentage point increase in state unemployment turns out to be a 1.67% increase in the probability that men will not have health insurance. So just a 1% rise in people not being unemployed, you're looking at 1 2/3% of them not being insured. And for children, this is the weird part about how our system is structured. A 1% rise in unemployment means that 1.3 or almost 1.4% of children will be covered because we cover children. Like their parents aren't going to get sick or some weird idea along that line. Another reason why we need national health insurance. But anyway, today we're going to be talking about these numbers. I can't get that out of my head, though. A middle-class family, $13,000 extra in their pocket. I'm thinking about myself. I'm going, you know, if I had an extra $13,000 in my pocket, what could I do? I could probably put that addition onto the house. My daughter needing braces wouldn't, be stretching the budget. Man, you could see the demand in this country explode. And it's what I've been talking about since the beginning of this program. A fairer, smarter, business-friendly tax code that makes sure that people like me, who have small children and are going to spend the vast majority of what I earn, have money to do just that, to keep people employed, to get this business cycle spiraling upward. That's what we need to be doing. Not slash and burn, not cutting federal employees. I mean, this idea that the Republicans have, we'll extend that unemployment. Oh, you bet we'll extend it if you give us a 5-year freeze on any pay raise for federal employees. Really? Are you freaking kidding me? And they'll say that with a straight face? Tell you what, I'll be happy to give you a freeze of the federal employees' pay raise if we take the percentage of CEO pay back to 1950, to where it was like 15 to 1. I think that's a reasonable thought, don't you? Anyway, going to take a quick break. When we come back, Aaron Gill from the Pennsylvania Health Access Network. Back after this.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Half of Michigan's African-American population could soon be without a representative government. If Governor Rick Snyder is allowed to appoint an emergency financial manager to oversee the city of Detroit, it will be the fifth city being run by a governor-appointed and unelected official. According to the Michigan website Eclectablog, the combined population of Benton Harbor, Ecorse, Flint, Pontiac, and Detroit is made up of 700,000 African-Americans. Congressman John Conyers has sent a letter to U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder asking for an investigation into the emergency financial manager law. The law was first implemented under former Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm, but earlier this year, the newly minted Michigan governor, Republican Rick Snyder, was able to pass legislation that expanded the powers of the unelected position. The managers can now fire elected officials, void labor contracts without discussion, and ignore or dissolve elected bodies. Conyers is asking Holder to look into the constitutionality of the law, specifically as it applies to the Constitution's Contract Clause in Article 4, which guarantees the right to a democratically elected form of government. A Congress filled with millionaires is indifferent to the ongoing suffering of millions of jobless Americans. Doug Cunningham brings you the voices of some of those workers.
Millions of jobless Americans continue to suffer as Congress does nothing to create jobs. Molly Wasserman of Toledo, Ohio is one of them.
I'd like somebody to answer the question for me about what exactly a person is supposed to do who is simply not being hired. Are we just supposed to die? Are we supposed to commit suicide? Are we supposed to starve to death homeless and on the streets? And I know that sounds dramatic, but that's really what people are facing.
Wayne Person of Mount Laurel, New Jersey is 59, and he's been looking hard for work for 2 years without success.
My wife and I have no health insurance and haven't had it for a long time. My benefits for unemployment ran out. It's forced me to actually tap into my 401k savings, which I am draining just to be able to live.
Eric Braddock's parents are unemployed. He can't understand why our government is letting the American dream die for millions of workers.
I was always told time and time again that if you play by the rules and you work hard, good things will happen. Please don't let that become a lie.
Workers' rights under attack. What do we do?
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average room. But why do I always feel...
Yeah, you know, I went to the store today to buy my wife some Mucinex D. Turns out the magical Mucinex D is almost a controlled substance that I almost had to get strip searched to be able to get just a box off the shelf, because they have taken the Mucinex D and put it in the back. I had to swipe my driver's license just to get my wife a little cough. So somebody is really watching, and I guess now I'm part of a federal registry where they're going to possible crack dealer. Amazing stuff. Our tweet of the day comes from Representative Brian Cutler, who said, he tweeted, debating tanning bed salon legislation. requires parental notification permission for 18 and under. Now, the Senate, you may remember, back at the end of October passed the tanning bed safety bill, 48-1. So, if you're under 18, you're going to have mom and dad hold your hand to go into the tanning bed. Wow. Sometimes you wonder. Anyway, I've got Erin Gill on the line. She's the Education Outreach Coordinator for the Pennsylvania Healthcare Access Network out in western Pennsylvania. Erin, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Again, it looks like we're still talking about the healthcare bill, and none of it very good.
Yeah, well, one of the things that the Affordable Care Act did was it left a lot of decisions up to states, and unfortunately the decisions Pennsylvania is making right now around how to implement it have all been pretty bad.
I would assume nothing else, you know, based on the fact that Corbett was one of the attorney generals, one of the first ones who signed on to try and have the whole thing overturned.
Right. No, absolutely. So pretty much everything in Pennsylvania's power when it comes to implementing the Affordable Care Act and making sure that people, you know, feel the benefits in a timely and complete way. They're throwing up roadblocks, dragging their feet, and sort of doing whatever they can to do the bare minimum. And that's exactly what they're doing with this bill that actually seems like it's on the fast track to pass before the end of the year. And it deals with protecting small businesses from excessive rate hikes. But if the, if the legislature gets their way, it's not going to do very much at all.
Yeah, I went through this with my teabag dentist, who, you know, I still go to. I like him. He's a good dentist, but he's one of these Tea Party types. And to him, you know, Obamacare is just the worst thing to ever happen. And he told me that, you know, because of Obamacare, his rates went up like 39%. And I'm going, I really don't believe that had much to do with Obama's health care bill.
Right.
I think it had more to do with the fact that you're being gouged by your insurance company.
Right. And you should have asked him, you know, how much have your rates gone up, you know, for the past 5 years? Because, you know, it's not unreasonable to think that they've gone up 20 and 30% every single year. This summer, I did kind of an informal canvass in Senator Don White's district. He's the chair of the Senate Banking and Insurance Committee. And small firms that were in the healthcare industry, whether they were dentists or whether they sold eyeglasses, they actually got hit with some of the highest rate hikes, you know, routinely, annual rate increases of, you know, 20, 30, and sometimes 40%. So this has been a big problem for a long time, and it's, you know, one of the biggest problems that the healthcare law sought to address was this issue of how to make sure people aren't being, you know, excessively charged for health insurance rates.
Right.
Because, you know, every time our rates go up, we never get better care, right? So our choice is to either, you know, take it or drop coverage. And unfortunately, too many people and too many small businesses have been forced to drop it.
I guess you could make the idea of the argument for the exchange is that all these small businesses will be able to go into this exchange and have more purchasing power and the ability to, you know, to bargain for better rates.
Right, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So I ask the question, is there no mechanism today that keeps my dentist or any small business, for that matter, from being gouged by these big insurance companies, for profit or not for profit?
No, actually not at all. So in Pennsylvania, our insurance department has no authority to look at rate increases from commercial insurance companies. And actually, some of the Blue Cross companies in Pennsylvania, like Highmark, have for-profit subsidiaries, which is where they sell their small business insurance. So effectively, right now, there are no protections at all for small business people, against excessive rate hikes. Insurance companies are totally free to raise rates 30, 40, sometimes 50% every year with absolutely no oversight. So part of the Affordable Care Act gave states like Pennsylvania, who have really awful protections in this market, funding and guidance to strengthen our laws and really get up to speed. So that's actually why the legislature is considering two bills. It's Senate Bill 1336 and House Bill 1983. And the intent of the bills is to make sure the insurance department has the power to look at rates in this commercial small group health insurance market. But unfortunately, it seems like legislators have chosen to do the bare minimum to comply with the Affordable Care Act instead of putting in place some real protections for small businesses. So we're working real hard to make sure that people know that and can weigh in and talk to their legislators before it's too late.
So the people who keep telling me, and because the Republicans are control everything here in the state of Pennsylvania. So the people who keep telling me that they're going to create jobs and they really care about small business have put forth a piece of legislation that is really going to harm small business.
Right, absolutely. So if this legislation passes, the only people who are guaranteed a hearing, to have their day in court to challenge an excessive rate increase are the insurance companies, if by chance their rate increase is denied. So a small business owner who's hit with a 30% rate hike can't say, hey, I want a hearing so the insurance department can investigate whether or not this is really necessary. They have no right to a hearing. And the insurance department can even choose whether or not to accept any public comment. So on the other hand, though, the insurance companies, they have a right to a hearing if their rate hike is denied. Some of the other problems with this legislation, the insurance department does not have to notify the public of pending rate increases. They don't have to publish a written decision on whether or not a rate increase was approved, and if it was, why. And also, the insurance commissioner has way too much discretion, you know, over which rates can be reviewed, which don't have to be, which can be posted, which don't have to be. So this is really a huge step backward right now. So if this bill passes, insurance companies can raise rates whatever level they want with very little scrutiny by anyone in Pennsylvania.
So you can make the argument that this is insurance industry friendly.
Oh, definitely. It's you know, industry approved window dressing. It's not going to change a thing. In all reality, it's probably going to cause rates to go higher. It takes away avenues for public comment. It takes away transparency, all of which are bad things. And we have, you know, really little time to turn around. But there's one, just sort of a thumbnail that kind of really highlights how nasty this is. You talked about your dentist and his rate increases. I talked to the owner of a small chemical processing company out here in Westmoreland County. The, you know, great, you know, really great example of a small business, you know, family run for 30 years. They provide all their employees with full benefits. Over the past 2 years, they got hit with a 25% and a 40% rate increase because wow. Their only female employee had an illness. So this law would do nothing to help business owners in his position. All it would do is give the insurance companies more rights, you know, more of a right to raise rates, you know, and escape any real and meaningful oversight.
So let me ask you, because, you know, I always thought that there was at least a pool that all these small businesses could go, which is why you went to these big companies, because they had the ability to pool the resources. Will a new law give small businesses the opportunity to buy into this, into a larger pool, so that they don't have these huge fluctuations when one person has an illness or one person gets pregnant or one person, you know, has surgery or something along those lines?
Oh, absolutely. So the new law bans insurance companies from discriminating, you know, using discriminatory pricing practices. And it also, through the establishment of a state-based insurance marketplace, it gives small businesses and anyone else who doesn't have insurance through their employer the opportunity to go in and pool together with other people to, you know, purchase a plan that's quality and comprehensive. There are standards set for any plan in this marketplace. It has to be comprehensive, offer, you know, a full range of services. And the idea is to increase competition, to actually have real competition between insurance companies on value and quality, as opposed to the, you know, really dysfunctional market we have today where insurance companies do all the choosing and, you know, people and small businesses do all the paying through the nose. So the law has a lot of new tools and strategies to give people more choice, to bring down costs. But a really important one is this idea of rate review, which is giving our insurance department the authority to look at rates and really determine whether or not they're based on evidence or they're based on an insurance company's desire to pad their profits. And we know that rate review works. Several other states have effective rate review systems. And even here in Pennsylvania, when the insurance department does review rates, so if it's an individual plan, like special care, for example, Highmark wanted to raise rates by 9.9%. There was a big public outcry. People said, look, you know, the benefits are bad enough. So our rates can't be enough. How can you raise our rates by 10%? And they actually scaled back their increase to 4.9%. So right now in Pennsylvania, when rates are reviewed, they're 40% more likely to be either withdrawn, reduced, or disapproved. So it's a really common sense, good process. You know, it's a good way to make sure that people are represented and have some rights, and we need to get it right in this bill.
Yeah, you bring up competition, and again, you look at most of the state of Pennsylvania, there's no competition, and even in the areas where they are, I would say collusion is more the word than competition.
Right.
And I hear the right talking about, well, what we should do is we should open up all the states so all the states can compete against each other, and, you know, we could have this cross-border thing, kind of like we did with the banking industry. And I'm kind of interested what your thoughts are on the idea of opening up the border to the state competition and opening these exchanges across state lines.
Well, I think a good example is looking at states that have worker protections versus states that don't. Because what we've seen is, you know, Texas has, you know, very, very, very few protections for workers. They've had a growth in jobs, but the jobs that they've grown are, you know, low wage, low pay, no benefit jobs. So, you know, it's you know, I think it'll create a race to the bottom. You know, as with anything about, you know, why don't we, I think it's a way to avoid, you know, consumer protections. I think it's a way to avoid common sense standards, and I don't think it'll work. Just the same way it hasn't worked for workers' rights, I think it'll not work for health insurance, in terms of, especially in terms of quality choices.
Yeah, I look what they've done to the banking industry, and, you know, that's my model for not wanting statewide exchanges. Anyway, Aaron Gill, I appreciate the time. Last question, what should people be doing? Should we be contacting our representatives? Senate Bill 1336, House Bill 1983, what do we tell them?
Tell them that you want small business owners to have the same rights as insurance companies, and you want some common sense protections to keep health insurance rates reasonable.
All righty, Aaron Gill, I appreciate the time. Great talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Aaron Gill, Education Outreach Coordinator for the Pennsylvania Health Access Network. She's out in western Pennsylvania. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Aaron Gill's name. It'll take you to their website. Going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ah, tis the season for heart-tugging stories, such as underdogs winning one for a change, or some have-nots finally getting a lucky break. So get out your hankies, friends, for I'm going to tell you a true life weeper about little Timothy, Brandon, and Gregory. These three lads recently pooled their pennies to buy a $1 Powerball lottery ticket at a gas station near their homes in Connecticut. And bingo! Despite almost impossible odds of 1 in 195 million that their numbers would pop out, Timothy, Brandon, and Gregory won the biggest lottery jackpot in state history. The lottery is all about dreaming, says the director of the Connecticut Gaming Agency, adding that everyday people win the lottery every day. So prepare to sob once you learn the touching backgrounds of these everyday boys. Timothy Davidson, Brandon Lakoff, and Gregory Skidmore are top executives of Bellpoint Asset Management, a multimillion-dollar hedge fund headquartered in Tony, Greenwich, Connecticut. Far from underdogs, these are the over-the-top dogs. Three have-everythings who now have much, much more. It's a happy holiday story for the 1%. And isn't that touching? Like a kick in the head. The threesome is getting a lump sum Powerball payment of nearly $152 million. Of course, they'll have to pay taxes on their good luck, which will subtract $48 million from their haul. That's a tax rate of about 31%, which is ironic, since hedge fund guys are used to paying a privileged special tax rate of only 15% on the big incomes they draw from their everyday speculative gambles in the magical world of hedging. This is Jim Hightower saying, to their credit, the three fortunate ones say they intend to give, quote, a significant amount of their bonanza to charity. Really? Half of it? A dollar? They declined to specify.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. The $1 million man always is his way.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So I was listening to an interview with Donald Trump, and, you know, it's one of these things where they're going, oh, Donald, you're wonderful. Oh, Donald the job creator. And, oh, we need more Donald Trump. Oh, we need Donald Trump, 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 Trump. We need job creators like Trump. It was this big Trump orgy is what it was. This is terrestrial. I really can't get into what it actually was. But here's the reality. We need to get the satellite. Because this is one of those moments where I need to tirade and rage. Because listening to this listening to this interview, just trying to suck up to this guy who has filed bankruptcy numerous times, has spent more time destroying jobs than really creating them. A guy who says, oh, I'm Mr. America, but all of his line of clothing and everything he slaps his name on because he's a marketing genius made somewhere else. I mean, understand, the guy's a wonderful self-promoter. The guy's, you know, a great real estate mogul. He gets the business dealings. But understand, he was born that way. His family, he grew up in it. So you have all of this human capital that comes with being the son of a Trump or the son of, you know, any big family name. You get that, like George W. Bush. If George W. Bush was not the son of the former president, he probably could not have gotten a job sweeping the floor at the local supermarket. But because he was the son of the president, he got into just about everywhere. In fact, they gave him a baseball team. So I look at Trump, and you know, they're giving this whole fest, oh, you're a wonderful entrepreneur, and you work hard, and you do all, and he probably does. But here's the reality. If he was Donald Trump, who grew up as my next-door neighbor in the projects, he wouldn't be Donald Trump, the real estate mogul. Not a snowball's chance in Hades. So they love to spin this yarn that, well, if you work 14 hours a day, and you work hard, and you get your mousetrap, and blah, 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 you're going to get ahead. Well, the reality is, and I've already told you the numbers don't lie. The share of income that's going to you and me of the economic pie has shrunk. The fact of the matter is, had we our share just back to 1980, had things stayed the same, had we had the labor movement pushing for wages, hours, had we had them pushing for better conditions and better benefits, we today, the middle class of this country, you make 55 grand a year, you got 13,000 in your pocket today if we just had the distribution we had in 1980. So when I hear T-Twits tell me, oh, are you talking about redistribution of wealth? You're damn right I am. So, we have these two Americas. The right wing is fomenting this, you can pull your stuff up by your bootstraps. And we need vouchers, and we need all of these gimmicks. So the latest gimmick, because Newt Gingrich got his short hairs in a twist, he had to think of something. Because, you know, the American people said, what? You want to put children to work cleaning bathrooms and take a job away from a union janitor? You want to put people back in the coal mines? You want to put these kids back to work and take jobs from their parents? Is that really what you want to do? And the blowback made him go, oh boy, we better do something. And the Donald, ready to take opportunity, says, let's make them apprentices. So now we're going to have apprentice child labor edition. They're going to go into some very poor neighborhood, some poor school, and they're going to find 10 lucky winners. And again, understand their world is based on winners of gimmicks. You won the lottery. You won the school lottery. You got a voucher. You're going to win the life lottery. You got a shot on the apprentice child labor with Donald Trump. And they're going to go in, and they're going to do this with these 10 kids, 10, mind you. And I just can't wait. Now, he said, we're going to have apprenti. Looked it up in the dictionary. There's no word apprenti. I'm sorry. It's apprentices if you're talking about plural. And you would think somebody of that educational attainment, someone who's more smarter than all of us, and more than happy to tell you he's smarter than you are, you think he would know that. And you would think someone as learned as the Newtster, you would think he would know as well. You know, he kind of nudged the guy going, no, that's kind of wrong word. No, don't do that. Understand, it's to them, it's a lottery winning system. You're gonna win this opportunity. Not making sure that the schools that these kids go to are top ranked, not making sure that their parents have opportunities, and Newt is right, to a certain degree, that kids in these neighborhoods don't see that image of parents going off to work and showing that side of life. He's right. But we shouldn't be slashing education. We shouldn't be slashing health care. We shouldn't be slashing federal employment. Those were jobs people had. And now what you're making sure it happens is that the poor neighborhoods, we're going to import all of the problems that the poor neighborhoods have up to the lower working class whose job you just cut out. Which, if you remember, and I go back to the day Obama took office, I wanted him to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. Why? So that you could reward work. We could get the wages people make on the job could support a family. I mean, look, you know, these kids aren't stupid. You know, there's a job out there paying minimum wage. They can go sell crack for $50 an hour. They're not stupid. They're gonna work where the jobs are. And they know when they're getting screwed. And they're getting screwed by the education system in this country, which we're fastly, quickly, speedily, hurriedly privatizing, taking the opportunity away. And I look at, you know, this report that just came out, talking about the salaries of the highest paid, well, call them CEOs. They're not presidents of universities. They're CEOs of universities because these are private firms. These are big companies. This isn't education. This is corporation. Constantine Papadakis. He was the CEO. You call him president. I'll call him CEO. 2009, before he died, almost $5 million. You look at the next top three earners. William Brody, Johns Hopkins. $3.9 million. Donald DeRosa, University of the Pacific. I've never even heard of that. He's getting $2.4 million. Henry Bynum, Northwestern University, $2.3 million. And you go, wow, $2.3 million? And we're complaining about the guy at Penn State making $900,000. And then the next one down the line, Vanderbilt, the CEO there, almost $1.9. Charles Polk from Mountain State University, $1.8 million. And I'm going, do we have a priority problem in this country? And I think we do. Stevenson University, you ever heard of that in Maryland? $1.5 million, 16 times what the average professor makes. And that sounds great. I wish our CEO class would take that kind of number. But you're taking money out of education. You look at Wabash College in Indiana. Their CEO, or their president, because they have a president, their president makes $239,000, twice what the average professor makes. I think I would advocate for a system a little more along those lines. Because as you're looking at this, education to me is the key to building the next generation of critical thinkers, of entrepreneurs and of inventors, of people who are going to take care of me when I get sick, the surgeon who's going to fix my first heart attack, all of those things. We need smart people. And what we're doing is we're closing those doors, and we're closing them quickly. So what's really happening is you're really seeing that two Americas coming forth. And, you know, I think John Edwards was as right then as he would be now. Granted, you know, he's got his problems. But you are seeing that right before our eyes, the investor class and the rest of us, corporate America, the corporate person and the rest of us. And I look at this tomorrow, the big news you're going to see across the headlines is that Alpha Natural Resources, this company that bought up the Upper Big Branch mine people, Massey Energy, you're going to see the deal that tomorrow a $200 million deal was made to cover all of their civil penalties. All of their fines, everything, remediate everything, and some limited criminal liability. Now, they're saying at this point, and I got to see this in writing, in an actual deal, but they're saying at this point that the bigwigs, Don Blankenship and the rest of them, are not immune. I find that amazing. And I want to see the fine print on that. Because most of the time what happens when they make these big deals is they tuck that in, immunity for their, you know, for their CEOs. If you go back to that mine fire, the Arkoma, back in 2006, where I think it was six people got killed, that was in there. That, you know, they tucked it in, and, you know, just in the little side language that they wouldn't prosecute any of the officers or any of the employees of the parent company. Just kind of let them, you know, slide. Again, that two Americas, the big corporate person and the big wealth person, they get away with things because they can buy their way out of it, which is why I'm so happy to see that that judge threw the SEC case out with them trying to pay off a little fine to get out of all those foreclosure problems. Make them go to court. Fine every one of them. Make them make every person they screwed whole. It's that simple to me, Jake. And I said from the beginning, make the people at the bottom whole. And we've been screwing them the whole way. I don't think it matters which party you're talking about. I think both would have screwed the people at the bottom. But we need to be fighting for them.
Well, to get back to the upper branch mine and Don Blankenship, there's no question in my mind. Decisions made by that man absolutely had a direct effect on the lives of those 19 miners. Somebody needs to be held accountable, and no amount of money, I don't care what they're, I don't care if they're fined $1 billion, it will never bring those men back. And if you want to stop this across the country, you got to start throwing some of these corporate criminals in jail. It's that simple.
If they want to be people, the corporations want to be people, you throw them in jail. Send them down to Texas. Let's execute them. We'll take a quick break. When we come back and answer the question, do tax cuts create jobs? Do the Bush handouts really do it? Back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Changing America for the better.
For 75 years, AFSCME has protected basic workers' rights. A living wage, health benefits, safe working conditions. These aren't privileges to be taken away. They're rights to be protected. This is Dave Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. Public services and workers' rights are under attack like never before. But the Main Street movement is pulling together. Nurses, firefighters, cops, teachers, students, and neighbors. Ordinary Americans are fighting back and making history. From victories in Wisconsin, Ohio, and right here in Pennsylvania, AFSCME was there. AFSCME will always be there. Coming after workers and their unions? It's a shameful agenda for Wall Street politicians, but AFSCME's been in this fight for 75 years. We're not about to stop now. Join the Main Street Movement at AFSCME13.org. And from all of us at AFSCME, happy holidays.
Me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Your proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website, or if you've got a smartphone, you can take the program on the go. So the big question, and it's one we've heard quite often, it is a right-wing talking point that I guess, it's one of those secret club things. In order to get in the door, you've got to have the secret password or know the secret word. And once you get past that, the handshake and, the elbow bump or whatever. But if you're going to be a Republican, you have to have bought full line, hook, line, and sinker, the concept that tax cuts create jobs. Now, we've had numerous opportunities to see that does not necessarily work. But you got to stick to it. And this Fred Upton, who's a representative from Michigan, you may know him as one of the six Republicans on the super-duper secret committee, well, the failed committee. He was interviewed by Bloomberg's Al Hunt, and Al asked him a simple question. He said, why under those pre-Bush tax cut rates did the economy do so well in the 90s? And it's the age-old question. Why when Clinton raised taxes, why did things spark? Why did things boom? And he asked the question, why under the Bush tax rates, less for the wealthy, to do so poorly for this decade? And Upton said, well, you know, a couple things. One, you know, spending went up. You know, Al, the wars, you know, we spent ourselves into oblivion. He says, I mean, that's trillions of dollars, you know, and there was no change in the entitlements. Of course, you got to go back to the entitlements because it's, you know, it's those old people and those poor people, those people. And Hunt, being, you know, a good interviewer, says, hey, yeah, but that shouldn't have hurt the economy. It shouldn't have hurt economic growth. And in fact, if you stop and you think about it, aside from Hunt, if you stop and think about it, the war should have stimulated the economy because we're producing some stuff. I mean, we're dropping bombs. You need to replace those bombs. We need new Humvees, replacing those. We needed doors for the Humvees. For a while, we didn't think that bullets went through canvas. So we needed to put some metal doors on the side of the war machine, which is kind of amazing to me that you would have war vehicles with canvas type doors. That doesn't make an awful lot of sense. But we did. So you would think, one would think, a rational person would think that, you know, the war would have actually stimulated the economy to produce. And then this Hunt goes, hey, you know, shouldn't have hurt the economy, shouldn't have hurt growth. And he said, yeah, but that impacts deficits and debt. And Hunt goes, but I'm asking why the economy... why did the economy grow a lot? He said, why were more jobs created in the previous decade under higher tax rates than under this decade of lower tax rates? And Upton, who was on the super committee, they put him on the super committee because, well, evidently, he must be super. He says, I don't know. Don't know. he goes, I can maybe merit a guess. But I mean, in large part, it's because we lost jobs. I mean, look at the jobs report. Came out last week. 300-some thousand people actually stopped looking for jobs. Yeah, because there are no jobs out there. And you know why there are no jobs out there? Because of people like you and your insane trade agreements. Which brings me to the Korean Free Trade Agreement. People in Korea, they're not happy with it. They don't want it. The workers there know this is a screw job for them, too. Why is it a screw job for them? They already know they're not getting the work either. So understand, we're not going to get the work because it's going to go to Mexico or China. 35%. The best our negotiators can do, 35% domestic content. That means, for you math geniuses out there, 65% of it can come from anywhere else. So my friend Andy sends me this letter, this article he clipped out of one of his local newspapers, points out that the South Korean government, they have tariff-free access zones for goods for their production. And they're paying North Koreans 25 cents an hour to produce part of their 65%. So as I said from the very beginning when we were talking about these trade deals, the Korean Free Trade Agreement is going to stimulate the North Korean economy and the Chinese and Mexican economy, and not even so much the Mexican economy. Because stop and think about it. China could ship stuff in here. We put it together here. Oh, we put 35% American-made content in, and we ship it over to Korea. And they take 65% of the North Korean-made products because, look, we're all turning capitalist, man. It's all who can screw who next. And they're going to ship it to us. And somehow we think that's a great idea. Now, understand, we're the country who has to have the Germans tell us to go to the WTO to save our own solar industry. That's how freaking stupid we are. And here we are, a net exporter of energy, evidently. We're shipping fuel out of the country. Gasoline, heating oil, diesel fuel, we're shipping it out at a higher rate than we're importing it. Yet, I filled up today, $3.34 a gallon. Explain to me again that supply thing, because we're shipping more out than we're importing. Why in the hell are we paying $3.49 for a gallon of gas? Makes no sense to me, Jake. Not getting it.
Well, they made a big to-do. It went down a couple cents, and all of a sudden, wow, we're supposed to be happy about that. I mean, please.
And here they are telling me, oh, you know, if we had our own energy, if we could produce, if we could drill and we could do this or we could do that, we could create jobs. Oh, we could have so many jobs. And I look at MIT, just came out with a report. MIT just came out with a report saying, you know what? All the money you're spending on military, that's the worst way to create jobs. If we were to spend $1 billion, military spending would create about 11,000 jobs. Tax cuts for personal consumption, they claim, according to the smart people at MIT, would create 15,100 jobs. If we spent that same $1 billion on clean energy technology, you're talking about almost 17,000 jobs. If we spent that $1 billion on health care, you would another 17,000 jobs. And if we spend it on education, you're talking almost 27,000 people working, paying taxes. I'm sorry, missing the point, missing the boat on this one, folks. But here we go. It's one of those things that just makes me nuts. But we have the Republicans who are saying laser-like focus on jobs. I am not seeing it. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Stephen on the line. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. What's on your mind?
Well, I've seen this coming from a long ways off. You have Rick Perry, who he looked great coming out, but he would rise or fall based on how he held himself in these debates.
Yeah.
And you see him and his stock has fallen. Bachman, she's trying to target Newt's immigration policy, because she sees the same thing. Mitt Romney, on the other hand, has taken the hardline approach with immigration. And so what this reveals is that Newt knows how things work. He knows how to get things done. He knows the mechanics of politics.
Sure he does. He's a good politician.
And this is what we're looking for. We're looking for someone.
Might be what you're looking for, but I'm not. I don't buy into his policies. Most of the things that he advocates, I think would take our country down the absolute wrong path. Most of the things that he's advocating are failed policies of the Reagan years. Here's a guy, maybe if he was the Newt of the 90s, maybe a guy who called for individual mandates. Now that he's against for the health care bill, kind of mind blowing to me, but maybe you can explain it.
All right. I don't agree with everything that Newt stands for, but this is what we're looking for. We're looking for someone who can get things done. The country is in deadlock right now.
Yeah, but he's not going to change that. He's only going to make it worse. The country is in gridlock because we, the voters, haven't decided on an ideology. We like to think that we can be scattershot all over the map. And what do you expect when you put hardcore people on both sides in a room who absolutely are never going to compromise because their idiotic doofus bases are telling them, if you compromise, we're not going to vote for you? That's how we end up with gridlock, brother.
Definitely. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for ideas. Newt Gingrich he's so intellectual. He sees so deep into things that people haven't given him a shot.
Yeah,
people haven't given him a shot because he sounds bogus from the common everyday experience of men. But we're looking. People are looking because nothing is moving, and they're looking, and they're actually listening to Newt.
Well, I don't know about that. I think he's the flavor of the month. The media has pushed him out there. I got to take a hard break here. Can you call back in a little bit? I got a guest in the next break, in the next segment. I'd like to pick this up, so please do.
All right.
Going to take a quick break. Right back with Lori Wallach from Citizen Trade Watch. Back after this.
While the poor man pays the fan, oh, they're billing me,
in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Half of Michigan's African-American population could soon be without a representative government. If Governor Rick Snyder is allowed to appoint an emergency financial manager to oversee the city of Detroit, it will be the fifth city being run by a governor-appointed and unelected official. According to the Michigan website Eclectablog, the combined population of Benton Harbor, Ecorse, Flint, Pontiac, and Detroit is made up of 700,000 African-Americans. Congressman John Conyers has sent a letter to U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder asking for an investigation into the emergency financial manager law. The law was first implemented under former Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm, but earlier this year, the newly minted Michigan governor, Republican Rick Snyder, was able to pass legislation that expanded the powers of the unelected position. The managers can now fire elected officials, void labor contracts without discussion, and ignore or dissolve elected bodies. Conyers is asking Holder to look into the constitutionality of the law, specifically as it applies to the Constitution's Contract Clause in Article 4, which guarantees the right to a democratically elected form of government. A Congress filled with millionaires is indifferent to the ongoing suffering of millions of jobless Americans. Doug Cunningham brings you the voices of some of those workers.
Millions of jobless Americans continue to suffer as Congress does nothing to create jobs. Molly Wasserman of Toledo, Ohio is one of them.
I'd like somebody to answer the question for me about what exactly a person is supposed to do who is simply not being hired. Are we just supposed to die? Are we supposed to commit suicide? Are we supposed to starve to death homeless and on the streets? And I know that sounds dramatic, but that's really what people are facing.
Wayne Person of Mount Laurel, New Jersey is 59, and he's been looking hard for work for 2 years without success.
My wife and I have no health insurance and haven't had it for a long time. My benefits for unemployment ran out. It's forced me to actually tap into my 401k savings, which I am draining just to be able to live.
Eric Braddock's parents are unemployed. He can't understand why our government is letting the American dream die for millions of workers.
I was always told time and time again that if you play by the rules and you work hard, good things will happen. Please don't let that become a lie.
Workers' rights under attack. What do we do?
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I will oppose the Columbia Free Trade Agreement.
Now it's time to clear the way for a series of trade agreements.
You can trust me.
From the Monongahela Valley to the Mesabi Iron Range, the coal mines of Appalachia, the story's always the same. 700 tons of metal a day. I saw you tell me the world's changed. Once I made you rich enough to forgive my name. In Youngstown.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, every time I hear that, you know, that just that line at the end, rich enough to forget my name. And that's really where we are today in the, with this globalization and these huge multinational corporations. Workers are just tools to be used and discarded. I just can't get that line out of my head every time I hear that. Anyway, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking about this thing that was driving me nuts. The fact that the WTO, the World Trade Organization, again ruled against a law that we have here, that we tried to pass here in the U.S., to make sure that meat coming into the country, that me as a consumer, because remember, the consumers are sacrosanct, I should be able to know where that meat came from. Now, understand, free market, the whole ideology is having all the information and having the ability to walk away. I don't know where my meat comes from. You go to the supermarket, who knows? Thanks to our friends at the WTO. That's why I've asked Lori Wallach. She's the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Going to talk about this decision by the WTO and maybe a couple others. Lori, thanks for taking time for me.
My pleasure.
you know, I listened to this, I read this story, and I am just seething with anger at the fact that basically our national sovereignty out the window.
This ruling is now the third time in as many months that the World Trade Organization, the tribunal in Geneva, Switzerland, has second-guessed important U.S. consumer safety laws. Twice they've sacked labeling, this very basic law that simply tells us where our meat is coming from, what country. Before that, they sacked the Dolphin Safe label that you see on your tuna fish can. And then before that, they said that the U.S. ban on candy-flavored cigarettes passed as part of the initiative to stop children from getting hooked on cigarettes was also a WTO violation. And I just want to note, none of us elected these guys.
Yeah, but what we did is we surrendered to them when our representatives signed on to this trade agreement. Well, most of them, all of them. Once we got into the WTO, that's the end of the game.
Well, you know, the one thing about this is the power of these examples for folks to be able to go back to their members of Congress, because in the end, Congress can get us out of these agreements or make the administration renegotiate them, to go back with the evidence. Because you know how it is here in Washington. All the big corporations have flotillas of lobbyists.
Yep.
And when someone like me, a recovering trade attorney, indeed, I read these agreements, says, oh, my Lord, look at this. This is going to strike down U.S. laws. Then all these lobbyists say, oh, she's a protectionist, or she doesn't know what she's talking about. But when the WTO hands us the evidence, that is when we, as consumers, as workers, as citizens, are strongest to go to our members of Congress and say, are you for this? Because either you're for this, therefore you're against me, or you need to get with me to change this, because we won't live with it. And very practically, Rick, the question now is the United States going to change these laws now that the WTO has insisted? Or is the United States going to say, WTO, you're the one whose laws are going to have to change?
Now, what happens if we don't change the laws and we don't go by the ruling? What kind of penalties would we likely, what would we be slapped with?
Well, the first thing they can do is appeal. And if you got a hot cup of coffee, put it down. I'm about to tell you something that's going to make you even madder, which is, so far the U.S. has not decided if it's going to even appeal these agreements, which would minimally buy us a year plus when we wouldn't have to change our laws no matter what. Crazy.
That's insane.
But assuming that we appealed and we lost and we refused to change the laws, then the WTO rules allow the imposition of trade sanctions against us until we change the law, which is what happened with NAFTA, with that crazy ruling that said we had to allow Mexican domiciled trucks that don't meet our safety or environmental standards here. There were sanctions on $2 billion of U.S. trade for 2 years. And then the Obama administration decided to cave in and allow in the truck.
Yeah. What Democrats do?
Well,
cave in.
It's very interesting, because if we actually can get this to be an issue that's not just Democrats and Republicans, but it's all of us really pissed off and noisy. I mean, you know, the point I always make is, who from the Tea Party likes the idea of an international tribunal of unelected guys in Geneva undermining states and states' rights and federal law? So that is an issue that unites us across the political partisan divides here.
Absolutely.
If you're an American and you're patriotic, you believe in democracy as in you're going to live with the result. Your Congress, your state legislatures, your courts are who makes those decisions. And we can agree and disagree. We can disagree passionately and scream at each other. But in the end, the decisions get made here, and if they don't work out, you reverse them. And this is a uniting point. This is the point where actually when these kind of rulings happen about laws that no one could call extreme. I mean, this is simply, are there going to be labels in the grocery store? So Democrats, Republicans, the like can actually know where the hamburger comes from to make sure when there's a recall that they're not going to poison their kids.
Right.
This is the kind of stuff that unites them.
Absolutely. I mean, I know where that cheap piece of garbage that my kid plays with comes from. It comes from China. It's stamped right on it. You know, the little plastic widget I bought, you know, just to throw around in the dirt, if I know where that's from, why can't I know what I'm ingesting?
Well, that's the most extremely offensive part of this, right? Because what is behind this is a bunch of big multinational meat companies who want the right to dish us up with dangerous mystery meat. The compliance, that if you read the god-awful 400-page WTO ruling, and you can go to our website, by the way, at tradewatch.org, we have an excellent blog that's called Eyes on Trade that translates out all these technical rulings. Oh, we did an analysis there, just to boil it down to what it means in English. We're tradewatch.org. You can find this analysis. And when you go through the analysis, it's actually really horrifying because the panel at the WTO even agrees that there actually wasn't any discrimination, i.e. the Mexican and Canadian meat came in without real effect by whether there were labels or not. There's no damage.
Right.
But under the WTO, literally, consumers' right to know is a trade barrier. That's got to get changed.
That's insane because, you know, we keep talking, as I said at the beginning, we keep talking about free trade, which is kind of idiotic. We're never going to get it. It's never happened. But if you believe in the model of it, part of free trade is an informed consumer who has the ability to walk away. You know the facts, and you're not strong-armed into buying it. You have the ability to walk away. If I don't know where this meat's from, because I'll be honest with you, Lori, there's no way in a cold day in Hades I am buying a piece of meat that's labeled it's from Mexico. It ain't happening.
Well, and we should have the right to know. We have the right to know about so many other things, the things that we're going to eat that literally could kill us or our family. Now, here's the thing. The meat case, more than any of the other ones, makes people nuts. Every radio show I have done, conservative, liberal, every speech I have given about this, people just go nuts. And that, again, is our power. I mean, as mad as we all are, the trick is to translate that into action to make the change, because that case is indefensible. You find me a member of Congress who wants to stand up, Democrat, Republican, independent from Mars, and say he or she is for us not knowing where the meat we're going to feed our families are from. You will not find that person, which then means they have to be part of the effort to change the rule.
I mean, is it possible, though? I mean, the reality is these trade deals are so detailed and so difficult to get into that is it possible to go and renegotiate this? And I know when Obama was running for president, he had talked about renegotiating NAFTA. Is it even possible?
Yes, it is. It's a question of political power. So here's just one example. The World Trade Organization also has a bunch of extremely boneheaded backwards rules on financial regulation. It was written during the heyday of crazy deregulation, with all the big banks and securities firms basically calling the shots. So after the global financial crisis, a lot of WTO countries looked at those rules that have been there since the 1990s, and they said, all right, we have to repair this and renegotiate it. And a large block of countries actually pushed to do that. This has still got a life. This is still going to happen, although I'm sad to say the United States and the European Union blocked it happening as an official start next month.
Jeez.
But that's an example of when the work is done where countries have to, for their own domestic political needs, they have to go change the rules. Yes, you can change the rules. And the U.S. could have done that with NAFTA. If the U.S. had gone back to Mexico and said, here's the deal, we're never going to let in those trucks until they're safe. So you can sanction us, but it really isn't going to get you much. It's not going to change policy. Let's negotiate on something else. We'll trade off. We'll change that part of NAFTA, and we'll trade you something else. That is exactly, just FYI, what the Europeans did. The U.S. won a ruling against their rule on meat not having artificial growth hormone.
Right.
That was another disgusting case. The Europeans just banned that stuff. We probably should, too. Okay, the U.S. sanctioned them for hundreds of millions of dollars for numerous years. The Europeans came back every year and said, listen, sanction us if you will. We're never going to change that law. We're going to have people chasing us with steak knives through our parliaments if we change that law. We're never going to change that law. Not politically possible. The U.S. sat there and looked at it for a number of years and finally said, okay, they're really not going to change that law. Let's go negotiate.
Right.
We got them a break on that. They have that law in Europe. They did not cave in. And instead we made a deal where they'd accept more of our hormone-free beef. That's
right.
Exactly what we have to do.
And here's the thing. I mean, this is where I'm a protectionist. And you said, well, you're a protectionist. I am. When I leave my house, there's this thing on my door. It's called a lock. I actually lock it. I don't have a moat. I didn't dig a moat around my house. I'm not an isolationist. But I do want to protect what's in my house. I do want to protect what's ours. So what you're saying, perfectly rational to me. I would have said, as president, much like you just said, there is no way in a cold day that a Mexican truck is driving in here for a nickel a mile or you know, 25 cents or $5 a day. It's not happening. Safe, unsafe, I don't care, not happening.
Well, and Rick, the thing that's the most infuriating about this, and again, the reason why we all need to make a hell of a lot of noise about these rulings, is because the United States is best positioned of any country in the world to be able to do that. And here's the reason why. The only ostensible upside to having our huge honking trade deficit is that every other country in the world relies on us sending us stuff to make their economy go. So when we say, yo, guys, we're not playing it this way anymore, everyone sits up and takes notice because they need us. When we say to the other guys, you, change your rules, they just kind of laugh. But when we actually threaten them with, no, really, we're not going to do this. We're going to change the rules. We'll withdraw from the agreement unless you change the rules. If we get serious and do what the Europeans just say, no, we're never going to do it. Take your time and sanction us. We're not going to budge. Instead, we cave in.
We should listen to Ron and Nancy. Just say no.
Well, and here's the deal. Everyone who's listening to this and getting annoyed, there is a number everyone should always have on their refrigerator door. It is the number to the U.S. Capitol. From that number, you can get to both of your senators and to your House member. It is one simple number. It is 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121. Even if you're not exactly sure who your members are, you just give them your zip code. They'll connect you. You get to the office, you say, I want to talk to the chief of staff. You get the chief of staff on the phone, you get the voicemail, and you give them a piece of your mind. What is the congressman or the senator going to do to change the WTO rules? This disgusting ruling saying we can't know where our meat is from is unacceptable. Send me a letter. Here's my address. I'm a constituent. You will be surprised, actually, how few irate, informed calls need to go in to get action.
Absolutely, and that's why I've got that number on my speed dial on my cell phone. It's one of those numbers you should have right there in your list. Make it a habit of giving them a call every day and letting people know, letting them know exactly where you are. Now on this, you know, I gotta be honest, when I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I had a couple of people send me emails and saying, I don't know what you're talking about. It wasn't on my idiot news at night and I didn't hear Rush talking about it. Why aren't we hearing more about this stuff?
Yeah, well, here's the part where I pull my hair out. Too bad it's not TV right now. You can see me with a handful of hair. In the last 10 years, the number of newspapers, of television stations that actually have people covering trade has gone to almost zero. So when one of these cases comes out and the trade representative, the U.S. officials, spin it, oh, don't worry, the WTO, and then they read like a sentence of a clause of a sentence that's the, you know, one useful thing. That's what they said, and they get away with making it seem like it's not a story. There's not any expertise. And I have to say, we actually made a big push to try and get this story covered in the New York Times, on CNN, and it's shocking that it didn't get more play. It got almost nothing. None of these. The smoking case, the dolphin case. I mean, you know, effectively, the WTO has killed Flipper.
Yeah, but here's
the thing. Our kids should smoke. Yeah, wants to feed grandma poison hamburger, and there's no news.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Lori. I mean, the corporate America has spent billions and billions of dollars of telling people that their government sucks. If you give them something where their government can make an action, and you're looking to government to do something, then people lose that frame of government sucks. I mean, and you got to understand that corporate America owns, I shouldn't even say corporate America, global corporations own everything, virtually everything we see, hear, and read. So if it doesn't fit with that message, i.e. government sucks, you're not going to hear about it.
There is a piece of that. That said, we're still digging away to try and get some television coverage of this story. And the big sort of decision that has to come is whether or not the U.S. will appeal. And I suspect if they announce they won't appeal, that will actually cause some news, because that means right away we're going to have to get rid of the label, and then we're going to live it. Right now the U.S. government's saying, oh, we're not sure what we're going to do.
We're not sure. You know, what drives me nuts, and I got to be honest, you know, I look at all these trade cases that the steel workers have pushed forward, to get the government into doing something. And I look at this latest story I was looking at. This German solar company, who has a U.S. subsidiary, is telling the American government that they've got to take the Chinese to the WTO because we're getting screwed on solar panels. So we've got a German company telling the American government to protect themselves from the Chinese because we're not bright enough, evidently, to protect ourselves.
That's a very astute observation, my friend. It crossed my mind exactly the same way.
I mean, it's just insane to me. And we don't see this stuff on the evening news because we want Runaway Bride or whatever the Twinkie of the month is, the Kardashians or whatever. That's our infotainment. That's our news.
Again, I agree with that. The news situation is abysmal. However, it is the case, and I've seen this time and time again, when Americans get mad, and either call their members of Congress, you know what's even more effective, especially now because Congress is going to be home for a chunk of time over the holidays, they often have office hours, town hall meetings. If you show up, at first it might seem intimidating. It's not. It's basically all your neighbors. You come in, you raise your hand to talk, and you basically live get the member of Congress to tell you what they're going to do about it.
Yeah, and then they shoot you with tear gas.
Well, I think that there have been many good opportunities, if you will, bird dog the members. You get them in public, and it's hard to dodge if you basically ask them, are you for or against the World Trade Organization telling us we can't have meat labels? And if you're against it, can you do something about it? That actually has proved time and time again to also be a very successful strategy, to get around the news, to go directly to the decision makers.
That's what we need to be doing. We need to be hounding them, especially when it comes to trade, because it's really about jobs. And again, the website, citizen.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Lori Wallach's name. It'll take you right to their study. We've got it all right there at thericksmithshow.com. Lori, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate you taking time for us at night.
Thank you so much for spotlighting this case and for all you do, Rick.
I appreciate your taking time for us. Thank you, Lori.
Bye-bye.
Lori Wallach, Director of Global Trade Watch. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. How about that green meat? Back after this.
Your proud defender of a working class majority, Rick Smith.
Ah, tis the season for heart-tugging stories, such as underdogs winning one for a change, or some have-nots finally getting a lucky break. So get out your hankies, friends, for I'm going to tell you a true-life weeper about little Timothy, Brandon, and Gregory. These three lads recently pooled their pennies to buy a $1 Powerball lottery ticket at a gas station near their homes in Connecticut. And bingo! Despite almost impossible odds of 1 in 195 million that their numbers would pop out, Timothy, Brandon, and Gregory won the biggest lottery jackpot in state history. The lottery is all about dreaming, says the director of the Connecticut Gaming Agency, adding that everyday people win the lottery every day. So prepare to sob once you learn the touching backgrounds of these everyday boys. Timothy Davidson, Brandon Lakoff, and Gregory Skidmore are top executives of Bellpoint Asset Management, a multimillion-dollar hedge fund headquartered in Tony, Greenwich, Connecticut. Far from underdogs, these are the over-the-top dogs, three have-everythings who now have much, much more. It's a happy holiday story for the 1%, and isn't that touching? Like a kick in the head. The threesome is getting a lump sum Powerball payment of nearly $152 million. Of course, they'll have to pay taxes on their good luck, which will subtract $48 million from their haul. That's a tax rate of about 31%, which is ironic, since hedge fund guys are used to paying a privileged special tax rate of only 15% on the big incomes they draw from their everyday speculative gambles in the magical world of hedging. This is Jim Hightower saying, to their credit, the three fortunate ones say they intend to give, quote, a significant amount of their bonanza to charity. Really? Half of it? A dollar? They declined to specify.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, that's where you can go to get our podcast. Or, if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. You know, I look at that, and you know, Lori Wallach is somebody who, you know, spends her life examining our trade policies. And while she won't say that she's protectionist, she's a protectionist because, you know, they beat her up over that. I'm not afraid of it. As I've said, when I leave my house, there's that little circular thing that a key goes in that locks my door. I do that when I leave the house because I don't want someone coming and stealing all my stuff. What we've done in this nation is we've left not only the back door, but the front door wide open. And our stuff, i.e. all of the companies that built this country, all of the jobs that we had, they went right out the front door. And out the back door, and out the windows, and out the side doors, through the roof, out the basement. They've been fleeing because we've allowed that to happen. This is what happens when you put capitalists in charge. They care about one thing. Money. Pretty simple. It's about winning the game of capitalism. It's about winning the game and putting more money in their pocket and putting you out of business. That's the game, folks. And I look at this Mark Walpole. He was one of Mitt Romney's buddies. For about 9 years, they were partners at Bain Capital. And he said, look, he goes, you know, because Mitt's been running around going, you know, I'm a job creator. And, you know, I know how to create jobs and, it's about, you know, we're going to get people back to work. But if you examine his record, I mean, really get into what Mitt Romney did, he cost thousands of people their jobs. He was an axe man. They went and they cut up companies and they spun off most of them to die and those people lost their jobs. But what this guy, Mark Walpole, said is, he goes, I never thought of what I do for a living as job creation. He says, look, the primary goal of private equity is to create wealth for your investors. I don't understand why people don't get that. The guy is being very honest. Look, I'm not creating jobs. I'm creating wealth for my investors. I don't give a rat's behind about Joe the unlicensed plumber. I don't care about Rick the truck driver or Jake the chocolate worker or Brett the knob twister. Don't care about them at all. They're liabilities. All of those people who work, liabilities. Got to pay them. They want raises. They want health care. Always wanting something. If you could just get rid of them, profit. Tons of profit. And, you know, you go and you look at this, and at some point I wish someone would say, you know, I get the capitalist thing. What we need to do is we need to have smart rules to the game of capitalism. I'm a capitalist. Understand that. But not in the mythical model of capitalism. What we have today is monopoly. And understand, the game of monopoly was originally named greed. That was the name of the game. This brand of winner-take-all and manipulate the system so no one ever takes from me is killing this country. The fact that you have GE and these big multinationals who own our Congress, write the laws, and never can lose. Where's the competition? And like I said earlier, had we just the same division of the national pie that we had back before Ronald Reagan in 1980. And this is a venture capitalist saying this. Had we the same distribution, the bottom fifth of people in this country who in 2007 made $17,000 a year would have saw their income go up by $6,000. They would have had $23,700. What do you think that extra $6,000 would have done for those people in the bottom fifth? Well, I'll tell you what it would have done immediately. It would have taken them out of poverty. It would have given them money to consume, to spend, to get to work, to maybe buy a new car, to maybe send their kid to a decent place, maybe buy a better house. or a house at all. The second fifth, that next tier up, those people making $38,000 a year. If we had the same distribution, 1980, the same exact distribution, you're talking about $48,000 in 2007 dollars, a difference of $10,000. What do you think that $10,000 would have done? And for people like me in the middle fifth, I would have seen $13,000. People making $55,000 a year, I'd have seen $13,000. What could I have done with that? Now, here's where it kind of changes. And this is where we have two Americas. The higher up the income chain you go, the better it has been for you. If you're in that fourth, fifth, you know, that top 20 to 40% there, and you made $77,700 in 2007, you would have only seen an $11,700 gain. So now it's turning the other way. But the top fifth, that top 20%, they actually saw their actual income in 2007, $40,000 higher than it would have been in 1980. And who are those top fifth? They're the people who fund campaigns. Now hold your hat for this one. The people who own this country, the top 1%. Actual average in 2007 was $1.3 million, $1,319,700. In 1979, their income would have been $537,100. The difference, $782,600. You want to talk about redistribution of wealth? You want to talk about you and me getting the royal screw job? There it is. The numbers don't lie. But we keep talking about, oh, we need tax cuts because the wealthy know what to do with the money. Yeah, they do. Make themselves richer. Create jobs in China. Create jobs in India. What are they doing here? Look, the global capitalists, they're no more American capitalists. Lose that. They're global capitalists now. They're going to seek opportunity where we allow them. And I have no problem with a global capitalist because we've done this to ourselves. We've allowed this to happen. And I blame you. I blame me. I blame every voter who voted for someone like Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney or Bill Clinton, for that matter. All the people who preach this neoliberalism, they're the ones to blame for this. It's that simple to me, Jake.
You know, this guy that you're talking about, this is not just your average capital investor. I mean, he started 20 companies. He's one of the original investors in Amazon.com. He said several things that I think every member of Congress should receive a golden bossed envelope. He said two things. He said, rich people like me don't create jobs. Middle class consumers do. And this is the coup de grace for me. He said, let's remember that capitalists without customers are out of business.
That's it. Coup de grace. Coup. All righty there. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back to do the coup de grace when we get back.
90% of the world, 10% of the people, own 90% of the world. We're new to them. Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people, own 90% of the world.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Dear John Bank, I am so sorry it has to be this way, but there's just no choice. I wish circumstances were different, but I can't hide my feelings any longer. I'm in love with another, and you just don't compare. I got tired of you taking advantage of me, charging me higher and higher fees, and raising rates behind my back. I did love you so. But now we have to break up. It's hard, but the right thing for me. I'm with PSECU now, and this credit union treats me right. That's all I ever asked for, to be somewhere I belong.
If you're ready to break up with your bank and take back what's yours, we're ready to help. Call, click, or come in. You can join. Go to PSECU.com/befree and see where you belong.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
$600 million. Sounds like a lot of money, doesn't it? That's how much Pennsylvania loses each year because of tax loopholes that allow some big corporations making millions of dollars in our state to pay less state taxes than you or I do. $600 million. That pays for huge bonuses for corporate executives instead of state programs. Does that sound fair to you? In tough economic times, more people turn to government for help. But many programs, like those that protect children and help senior citizens, have been cut so much that some services are not available. State legislators have to bring fairness to the tax system. Instead of cutting programs, they should take a balanced approach to the budget. Make big corporations pay their fair share. Call your legislators today. Tell them to close the loopholes, not cut vital programs. After all, that $600 million is coming out of our pockets. Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Let's have a tea party like the Romans do. We'll share the finest tea and fancy cookies too.
Yes, with cute little plates and doilies and our pinky up. Cute little cookies, too. You know, look, I love Michelle Bachmann, as crazy as she is, and I'm hoping that when we go to New Hampshire for the Republican primary in January, I'm going to actively seek to get my picture taken with Michelle Bachmann because, well, I got to be honest, infatuated with the woman. Fits the mold and crazy, too. You can't ask for better than that. And I say Marcus Bachmann, luckiest man on the planet. I used to think it was Christopher Guest, but now it's Marcus Bachmann. And you don't even know who Christopher Guest is, do you?
No, I don't.
He's married to Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis is still a very good-looking woman. You're probably correct in that assumption.
Yeah, well, and I'm changing that. Marcus Bachmann. There you go, because I can't be honest, love crazy. And she's got a new crazy statement coming. She's got a bunch of crazy statements out. But the one that caught my attention was the one on immigration. We need to kick out all those undocumented taps. Need to go get them. She said, well, they're costing us a bunch of money. And then when asked with the rational idea, how are you going to do it? How are you actually going to do this? Well, we're going to have law enforcement do it. So we're going to make sure that when the police pull someone over, they de-immigrate them. Take them out.
De-immigrate them?
They're going to de-immigrate them. It's my new Bush word.
That's pretty good.
It's a Texas word. De-immigrate. just like Alabama wants to do. Now, they're going after the foreigners, okay? See, they won't get rid of those foreigners. You remember... I think it was last month that they arrested the German director of the Mercedes-Benz factory in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, because he didn't carry his driver's license. And it was a kind of a funny ha-ha thing. All right, they passed that really strict immigration law where if you don't have your papers, no papers, we're going to arrest you. And they thought, well, ha-ha, funny. They found this German guy, and they arrested him. Well, turns out, last week, they arrested Haricho Yada, who is a manager at the Honda plant there in Alabama, in Leeds, Alabama. Now, this guy was right there. According to the report, they pulled him over. I guess they have a lot of checkpoints down in Alabama. Again, got to love that Constitution thingy. We're going to stop everybody on the road and check their papers. A lot of constitutional stuff there. My teabag friends, please feel free to call in and tell me how much you love the idea of checkpoints and checking your papers. But anyway, they pulled him over at the checkpoint, blow into my hand, and they said, give me your license. Didn't have it with him. Didn't have an Alabama license with him. So he showed his passport, his U.S. work permit, and an international driver's license. Evidently, according to Alabama law, you have to either have an Alabama driver's license or a Japanese license. Can't be an international driver's license. So they arrested him. And I'm going, that's really a great way to encourage other businesses to come into your area. So there you go. Nice job, Alabama. Keep it up. While you're out there looking for those brown people, you're catching yourself up with the job craters. See, because you could make the argument that they just ticked off two job craters. I'm putting those jobs in because they're job craters, understand? Because they like creating jobs. They love jobs, yes. Yeah. Just nuts. I mean, stop and think about it for a second. We that piece of paper we seem to love so very much, and I do, when we actually follow it. We've just thrown it out the window there. They're not only stopping people on the side of the road, but they're asking them for their papers. Now, I remember when I was driving truck for a living, I came out of Plattsburgh, New York, coming down from the north. And Plattsburgh's only, you know, a little bit from the Canadian border. So the Border Patrol had set up in the middle of the highway, coming down I-87 there, and they just set up lights on the highway, checkpoints with ladders on the road. So all the cars had to stop on the highway, and they were checking every person. This is a couple of years back, thanks to one of those things right after 9/11. Got to make sure that there are no foreigners coming across. Again, that piece of paper we seem to love. Shouldn't you have done that at the border? Isn't that what that border's for, instead of 50 miles away? I mean, we slowly, and this is where I agree with Ron Paul, we are giving up our rights, our liberty. We're giving up our privacy. We're giving this all up for some illusion of security. Look, folks, you're not secure. And in a free society, let me let you in on a little secret. You're never going to be. That's part of the wonder of being, quote-unquote, free. Someone is free to walk down the street, and if he doesn't mind going to jail or being killed himself, he can kill you. That's a free society. Congratulations.
So this road check was set up by U.S. Marshals. Is that what you're saying?
The Border Patrol.
Border Patrol.
Yes.
50 miles from the border.
Yeah. but there they had. They had their little ladders, and they would climb up and look into your truck. And
do they have jurisdiction?
Well, they have jurisdiction until you
decide.
Anybody
take them to court?
Until somebody takes them to court. I didn't. I stopped. They said, where are you going? I said, home. Okay, what's in the back? I don't know. Open it up. I can't. You go ahead. That's how it ended.
And did they open it up?
No, they said, go on. Because they weren't looking for me. Again, racially profiling because I didn't have one of those towels on my head at the time. Because that's who they were looking for. And going back to the caller earlier, you know, you got Newt Gingrich, who now seems to be going to the top of the polls. And I remember last week what John Danforth said, the Republican, former Republican senator from Missouri, who said, look, you know, I've been watching these debates, and they're terrible.
He's embarrassed.
Just embarrassed by what's going on. And I love that. He literally said these Republican debates, they're just terrible.
And this guy was
doing my best Charles Barkley. They're just terrible.
He's not a liberal lily. This guy was a middle-of-the-road conservative.
Well, he was Bush's ambassador to the U.N. So you go back and you look at this, and he's going, look, when the big applause lines at debates are the governor killed 234 people, yeah, or we're torturing people, yeah, or let's electrocute people on the Mexican border, hooray, or hey, little Johnny went to the hospital, doesn't have health insurance, let him die, and you get applause from that? I don't know any rational human being on this planet. At least I personally don't know anyone. Obviously, you Republicans are out there. Please, your party is being taken over by extremists, and you're being fed, spoon-fed, this nonsense. That you got somebody like Trump. Evidently, the story with Trump is he pulled himself up by his bootstraps. He wasn't born into a very, very wealthy family who had tons of capital, human capital. The invisible stuff, the stuff that you and I have to learn the hard way, was just part of his existence. But somehow, you know, he's the guy, he's the Horatio Alger now. He pulled himself up.
The Donald. Oh, by the way, did you hear about the war that broke out with him and Karl Rove?
Yeah. Again, you know, you know what politics is turning into? It's turning into World Championship Wrestling. I mean, now you've got the Trump character jumping into the ring, stirring stuff up.
I think he's pretty funny.
I do too.
I mean,
but this isn't how I want my country run.
But hey, listen, let the Republicans kill each other. You know, Karl Rove said, you know, this is crazy, and he what he said was accurate. He said Donald Trump has said next year he might enter the race as an independent. Why isn't the spokesman for the Republican National Committee telling these other Republican candidates, don't go there? That's a good point. Of course, Donald Trump, you know, being the big mouth he is, couldn't keep his mouth shut. And he basically said, you know, Karl Rove and George Bush crashed and burned. So why are we worried about what they think?
Well, I mean, the reality is Trump, there's no chance for him to win. There's no chance for him to jump into the race. He can come become a third-party candidate, and it'll be to promote his TV show.
But
at the end of the day, he is a masterful self-promoter. It's all about him.
The one thing that's even close to his wealth is his ego. And
I think his ego is bigger than his
wealth. He keeps saying he might. I think you're probably right at the end of the day, although under the right conditions, I would not put it past him next year getting into the race.
He's an egomaniac. Of course he's going to jump into it as an independent. It'll be the Trump party. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think? Is it the Donald? Do you want the Donald with his hair and his bankruptcies? Or do you want Newt with his adultery? Up to you. Back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
For 75 years, AFSCME has protected basic workers' rights. A living wage, health benefits, safe working conditions, these aren't privileges to be taken away, they're rights to be protected. This is Dave Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. Public services and workers' rights are under attack like never before. But the Main Street movement is pulling together. Nurses, firefighters, cops, teachers, students, and neighbors, ordinary Americans are fighting back and making history. From victories in Wisconsin, Ohio, and right here in Pennsylvania, AFSCME was there. AFSCME will always be there. Coming after workers and their unions, it's a shameful agenda for Wall Street politicians, but AFSCME's been in this fight for 75 years. We're not about to stop now. Join the Main Street movement at AFSCME13.org.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy. The Rick Smith Show.
Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. According to a new study published today by the folks at the University of California, Berkeley, according to scientists there, they claim to have discovered two of the biggest black holes ever observed. They are saying each of these black holes have a mass billions of times greater than the sun. The two giants are located in the heart of a pair of galaxies several hundred million light years from Earth, according to the study that they published in the scientific journal Nature. And, you know, I thought, when I saw the headline, two largest black holes ever, you know, I'm thinking the space between Michelle Bachmann's ears and Rick Santorum's ears. I guess my mind was just thinking political. Since we've been talking about presidential politics, I was thinking the void of thought in the Republican Party, and there being two of them. Don't know if you saw the big news. The Herman Cain train has derailed. He is suspending his campaign. Had a theatrical reading that I just kind of love. I got to be honest. Kind of blows my mind that a presidential candidate would quote Pokemon. But, you know, and I'm sure that the people who created the Pokemon, cartoon and the cards and all of the craze that, you know, happened back in the 90s, I can imagine, that they never ever thought that their work would be quoted by a potential president, that someone who could be the most powerful man in the world would give a theatrical reading of the Pokemon. So here, Herman Cain. And his theatrical reading.
Life can be a challenge. Life can seem impossible. It's never easy when there's so much on the line. But you and I can make a difference.
You and I on the line can make. He sounds almost like William Shatner, doesn't he? I mean, if William Shatner were to do the great Pokemon theatrical reading, it would be something like that, wouldn't it? You and I on the line. Evidently, Herman out, and he is going to, I guess, going to be given his throwing his weight behind Newt Gingrich. And again, you know, the Trumpster says, hey, I might throw in too. What the heck? If Herman's out, why not me? And what bothers me about this, and again, this is one of those things that you go, you hypocrite. If you're out of the race, get out of the race. Don't, I'm going to suspend it so that I can get federal matching dollars. I can get federal money out of this. Because I thought we're broke. So a story to watch, and I haven't seen anybody talk about this yet, but what happens if we give him money since he suspended his campaign? I thought we're broke. Remember, Mr. 999, we need to be fiscally responsible? What do you think? I mean, should
good question. I assumed that when he said he's suspending, he doesn't qualify.
Well, no, he does. The reason he's suspended is that he then becomes qualified for it. If he would have quit, said, that's the end of it, I quit, I'm out, leave me out of it, I'm keeping my infidelities to myself.
Well, as I said last week, there's some insiders that think that he's going to stay around to qualify for the money and then get out. And that could very well happen.
And again, the question was, isn't that wrong? I thought we were broke. Isn't that going against his ideology?
It's playing the system. Gee, I'm shocked, Rick. A politician that's a hypocrite. Oh, let me sit down on that one.
Amazing. You know, and it's one of those things that just frustrating as hell, you know, and because you've got these people who are just dirtbags, and I look at Gingrich, and I look, Gingrich is one of those guys who, you know, there's a lot of history here. And I look at a guy who worked with him, a fellow Republican, this guy, his name's Guy Molinari, a former representative from New York, a Republican, who, you know, basically said, look, Newt is an evil guy. He's got all tons of baggage. This is a guy who it's not just a U-Haul behind him. It is there's a train behind him. You know, why would anybody be considering this guy? And Nancy Pelosi said something that says, you know, Newt's got a whole, so she was asked, if she had any dirt on Newt. And she said, well, you know, I sat in a room for a year going over his ethics complaints. And you know what his response was? Not that I didn't do anything wrong. Not that, oh, no, those ethics charges were trumped up. None of that stuff. It was, if she tells, I'll sue.
Well, I mean,
he's got a leg to stand on.
He's got, surprised she said that. What she should have said, look, I've known him a long time, and I know a lot of dirt on him. But when she brought up the ethics complaints.
I agree.
And sitting with Newt in a room, if you heard her, she said, we sat in a room for a long time.
A year.
And she said, we came up with volumes of evidence. I'm not so sure she has the legal right to divulge certain things.
She doesn't. But, I mean, for me, the first reaction would have been, look, you know, fine. It should be out and transparent. You know, the American people should know what it is that I've done. And I want that, again, I'm a transparency guy. I'm a sunshine guy. If you're going to hold the highest position in the land, I want to know what you've done. And I look at this case with Freddie and with Freddie Mac, who, you know, he was very adamant. I did not advise them. I in fact, their business model is insane, he said. And I told them so. Yet we find out that they paid him like $1.6 million to be a historian. No, he was giving them advice.
That's typical Newt.
It's not typical Newt. It's a lie. And then to say, well, I told them their business model was insane, when Freddie Mac has archived video of him saying, oh, no, I'm in favor of their business model. The business model is the model of the future. It's the government-supported enterprise model, the GSE, which has evolved. Understand, the GSE has evolved into the P3, which we're now talking about here in the state of Pennsylvania, public-private partnerships, something we've been talking about since the Clinton era. He brought it in for us as well. But, again, the GSE, the government-supported enterprise model, where government takes all the risk and corporations make all the profit. That's what public-private partnerships are all about. You and me, the suckers who pay our taxes, we're the ones who end up holding the bag when the billionaires, people like Trump, get to file bankruptcy for the gambles that they make. That's the bargain. That's the grand bargain in this country. You and I, we assume the risk, so that the captains of industry can go out and play the roulette table and roll the dice.
Look, Newt's been around a long time, and at one time he was an extremely powerful man. But he was very, very ambitious. There must be a veritable trail, people he just ran over. And there must be all kinds of people that are willing to come out with some very damaging evidence. I mean, this guy cannot hide all of his discretions. It should not be that hard for the Democrats to be able to crucify this guy.
And they won't. His discretions.
Indiscretions.
At the end of it, this is not the guy. But I go back to this idea that they keep shoving down our throats, that we need to give tax breaks to the very wealthy, and we need to help the job creators. Yeah, we assume the risk. And, you know, I was talking to a friend today about workers' comp. And it's completely the opposite direction. As where we have, as the taxpayers, assumed all the risk for the big multinational corporations, for them to go out and gamble and to do whatever it is they want, and they profit from. You look at workers' comp, it's the opposite thing. We, the workers, assume all the risks, and the companies walk away from it, especially here in Pennsylvania. The broken compromise that I can't sue my employer for being injured, can't do it. That's what I've given up. And why I gave it up was, and I didn't, it happened back in 1910, here in Pennsylvania, 1913, Wisconsin, 1909. We gave it up a long time ago. That Constitution thing didn't apply. But we gave it up for the security of knowing that if we get injured, we're going to get money. We're going to get paid. And we're not going to have to fight for it. Well, here in Pennsylvania, 10 years. That's all you get. And then you're on your own, brother. And the more I research about this, the more I realize that, boy, we got screwed in that. We're getting screwed in this deal. I mean, it was bad to start with, and it's gotten worse. But you and I, we are the ones who assume the risk. The wealth class, they seem to be able to just make the rules. And we somehow buy into somebody like Newt Gingrich. I don't know how a working class person, a guy who punches a clock, somebody who's paycheck to paycheck, I don't know how you vote for a Republican. I'm sorry, I just don't get it. Now, I got a problem with a lot of the Democrats, too, which is why we need to have an organized effort to create a party or take back the Democratic or Republican Party to be the party of you and me. Bring me Teddy Roosevelt. I would quickly become a Republican if we had a Teddy Roosevelt type figure. In a heartbeat. And now you got the right, who now are attacking Teddy Roosevelt. It's pretty incredible to me. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Rick Smith. Smith Show.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Half of Michigan's African-American population could soon be without a representative government. If Governor Rick Snyder is allowed to appoint an emergency financial manager to oversee the city of Detroit, it will be the fifth city being run by a governor-appointed and unelected official. According to the Michigan website Eclectablog, the combined population of Benton Harbor, Ecorse, Flint, Pontiac, and Detroit is made up of 700,000 African-Americans. Congressman John Conyers has sent a letter to U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder asking for an investigation into the Emergency Financial Manager law. The law was first implemented under former Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm, but earlier this year, the newly minted Michigan Governor, Republican Rick Snyder, was able to pass legislation that expanded the powers of the unelected position. The managers can now fire elected officials, void labor contracts without discussion, and ignore or dissolve elected bodies. Conyers is asking Holder to look into the constitutionality of the law, specifically as it applies to the Constitution's Contract Clause in Article 4, which guarantees the right to a democratically elected form of government. A Congress filled with millionaires is indifferent to the ongoing suffering of millions of jobless Americans. Doug Cunningham brings you the voices of some of those workers.
Millions of jobless Americans continue to suffer as Congress does nothing to create jobs. Molly Wasserman of Toledo, Ohio, is one of them.
I'd like somebody to answer the question for me about what exactly a person is supposed to do who is simply not being hired. Are we just supposed to die? Are we supposed to commit suicide? Are we supposed to starve to death homeless and on the streets? And I know that sounds dramatic, but that's really what people are facing.
Wayne Person of Mount Laurel, New Jersey, is 59, and he's been looking hard for work for 2 years without success.
My wife and I have no health insurance and haven't had it for a long time. My benefits for unemployment ran out. It's forced me to actually tap into my 401k savings, which I am draining just to be able to live.
Eric Braddock's parents are unemployed. He can't understand why our government is letting the American dream die for millions of workers.
I was always told time and time again that if you play by the rules and you work hard, good things will happen. Please don't let that become a lie.
Workers' rights under attack. What do we do?
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Life can be a challenge. Life can seem impossible. It's never easy when there's so much on the line. But you and I can make a difference.
Yeah, baby. You and I, we can do it together. And I love the message, just not the messenger. So maybe now Herman will go back and maybe a new book tour. Maybe that's what he's working on right now. Suspended the campaign to write a new book to start the next phase. Maybe that's why he only suspended the campaign. Get the book done, go back out on book tour. Do the whole face thing. Hey, I'm presidential candidate again, buy my book. Got book number two. There you go. Maybe that's it. Maybe the Pokemon reference was to bring in the younger generation. Maybe he's a marketing genius. I mean, the 999 thing caught idiots' attention.
Well, maybe he took some advice from the former governor of Alaska. She pretty much did the same thing.
He's going to cash in. We're going to see him everywhere. He's going to be the new CNN or Fox News analyst. He's going to be able, which I personally think is what he wanted.
On a certain level, I mean, the man can handle himself well. He's, you know, I can see where he would be successful in the business world.
You're not going to say the dumb thing that they used to say about Colin Powell.
What's
he speaks
that?
So well.
Not necessarily, but he at a certain level, he handles himself well. I certainly don't agree with his politics.
I think of the Chris Rock routine.
I can see why he was popular with some people. That's all I'm saying.
There you go. I don't know if you saw the news, but it looks like we're going to be closing about 250 of the nearly 500 mail processing centers across the country. They're going to be cutting about 100,000 postal employees in an effort to save about $6.5 billion. They are cutting out the next day first class mail, so mail will no longer be next day. It'll take 2 to 3 days. And look, at the end of it, we've been telling you it's coming. The Postal Employees Union are saying, hey, we need some forgiveness from this pension, this insane pension mandate that UPS or FedEx doesn't have to abide by. They're pre-funding their pensions for 75 years into the future. That, to me, is a bit excessive, because if you think about it, I don't know anyone who's retiring today that will live 75 years on retirement. And really, that's funding the pensions of people who conceivably aren't even born yet.
And here's the irony about that, Rick, that now they're telling us, and I was on top of that same story, that they fully expect that instead of next day or within 2 days, you can expect a letter to take 4 or 5 days. And the irony is, because of that, more and more people are going to go to the private carriers and take even more business away.
Well,
and
what's going to happen is you're going to see more things going online, because you look at AT&T saying, look, we mail 55 million bills out every month. And they said, look, we rely on that being the next day so that we can get into compliance with that 2 week period that we have to have, which now you've got problems. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that go along with this. What we're doing is we're starving it, and the goal, understand the goal of the Republicans, privatize it, to destroy it, and privatize it, which you do know is the goal. So you saw the news there. Now we see FedEx and UPS are both going to raise their rates 5.9%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I heard, and this is one of those things that blow my mind, but I heard someone today, because I stopped at the post office to check my P.O. box, I heard someone today complaining about a 1 penny increase in postal stamps. On January 22nd, it's going to go from 44, I guess, to 45 cents. And there were people complaining that it was going up a penny. A penny.
No, I got a better one, Rick. I went online and looked at the local comments. Would you believe that some people were complaining because apparently their postman smoked, and they said they couldn't stand the smell of smoke in their mail. Never heard that one before.
No, I've never heard that one before. But, hey, some people. And look, I don't like smoke either, but that's a little nuts. But, I mean, the reality here is you look at UPS and FedEx, their rates are going up. Why? Well, because they can. They know, man, we're going to be the big players in town, and they are. They're the package people. And you know what's ironic? For the vast majority of their non-high-volume areas, do you know who delivers the UPS and the FedEx packages? The Postal Service.
Well, you mentioned something, Rick, and, a lot of people pay their bills online. What's going to happen? People are going to be forced more and more to go online because they do not want to be late. If you're late, they attack a fee, a penalty. So rather than be late, they're going to say, well, I'm being forced. I'm going to pay my bills online.
So now that you know that a lot of the stuff from FedEx and UPS being funneled through the Postal Service, think about what's going to happen down the road once they finish off the Postal Service. Because understand, the Postal Service has to, by mandate, deliver to every single house. They have to. That's the law. The FedEx and UPS, they don't have to. And they'll be more than happy to charge you an inflated rate. That we'll do it, but it's going to cost us a little extra because you're in a different zone and we charge by zones. So think about the profit that's being made by UPS and FedEx on the mandate that the Postal Service has to go to every single house. I mean, to me, that... we're killing off the Postal Service, and at the end of the day, we're only harming ourselves.
And I have a question. If that happens, and I hope it doesn't, But if it does, who's going to deliver the mail to very, very rural areas?
They're, nobody.
That's right. You can, I don't know how you can mandate that a private company has to provide service, you know, X number of miles away from their central delivery area. I don't, you can't do that. So what happens to those people?
Well, you're going to have to go into town. You're going to have to go to the P.O. box, and you're going to you'll get your own box, and that's where your mail will go.
That could be 25, 30, 40, 50 miles away.
Hey, that's the way it's going to be. That's conservative world.
You're right.
That's privatization world. That's where we want to go. You know what else has us a conservative world? Strip searches at the airport. Got to love strip searches at the airport, especially when you're talking about an 84-year-old grandmother. And, you know, I'm looking at this story and I'm going, you know, this is, again, more illusion of security. This 84-year-old woman that they actually strip searched, she said, they took down my pants. Then they took down my underwear. And, you know, I'm kind of looking at pictures of her because she said she was bleeding. She had blood flowing from her leg. She said, my sock was soaked with blood. She said, I was bleeding like a pig. Now, TSA is denying that the search ever happened, but she's saying, look, you know, this is it. So I'm looking at the pictures of her and I'm going, wow, she's, for an 84-year-old, she's pretty hot. We should strip search. The way she's posing over that walker, I can see it. Wearing that house coat the way she wears it, yeah, that's where. She's just begging to be strip searched. And I'm going, you know, why would you strip search an 84-year-old woman? But you know, hey, we've got protocol.
She could be an Al Qaeda agent.
Oh yeah, she looks like it. And then you got this 17-year-old girl from Florida, who I would have harassed, because she has this purse that has like guns on it. So part of me just says you're obnoxious, and we're gonna run you through the ringer anyway. And that's I think kind of what happens every once in a while. Now, they looked inside the purse. They didn't find anything except, you know, the normal stuff. But, you know, they did take a look at her purse. They did run her through the ringer. Well, she's now complaining because they're profiling her. She was terrified and she was upset and, you know, all this stuff. Well, you know what? And this is part of my mindset in this. What are you doing with a gun purse? And I'm sorry.
Maybe her idol was Annie Oakley.
There you go. Well, then don't be surprised. I'm against this whole strip searching nonsense, this whole run things through a metal detector, run things through the scanner, whatever. Leave my shoes alone. Well, leave Granny's britches alone. You know what? If Granny gets on with an explosive up her behind and everything blows up, well, you know what?
But
congratulations.
You know,
we live in a free society.
You know what surprises me? Some people who say they're conservative, they're coming out and say, I don't care. I want to be safe. I want to be safe. Well, first of all, if you're conservative, you would be very, very reticent to give powers to the federal government. The second point, I would guarantee you if they stopped them and harassed them or members of their family, they might have second thoughts. It's easy to say, yeah, do it if I'm safe.
Do it to them.
But if it happens to you and you're inconvenienced or embarrassed, it might be a horse of a different color.
Yeah, well, there you go. Anyway, we got an email during the break. Andy writes, I can still hear the cheers going up at FedEx and UPS. No more next day competition. Expletive. this has always been CEO Fred Smith's objective. Kill the Postal Service off. Pay back one of the largest, biggest GOP contributors. And it's what it is. It's a payback. And the guy who runs FedEx, I don't think he's been shy about that. I think the reality is they're thrilled to death. They have, well, they're in the process of slaying the giant. Anyway, going to take a quick break. What do you think? Postal Service, good, bad? Do we care about Saturdays? Because that's next. Saturdays will probably be out. And then Wednesdays. We'll get mail 3 days, 4 days a week. Back after this.
Right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Ah, tis the season for heart-tugging stories, such as underdogs winning one for a change, or some have-nots finally getting a lucky break. So get out your hankies, friends, for I'm going to tell you a true-life weeper about little Timothy, Brandon, and Gregory. These three lads recently pooled their pennies to buy a $1 Powerball lottery ticket at a gas station near their homes in Connecticut. And bingo! Despite almost impossible odds of 1 in 195 million that their numbers would pop out, Timothy, Brandon, and Gregory won the biggest lottery jackpot in state history. The lottery is all about dreaming, says the director of the Connecticut Gaming Agency, adding that everyday people win the lottery every day. So prepare to sob once you learn the touching backgrounds of these everyday boys. Timothy Davidson, Brandon Lakoff, and Gregory Skidmore are top executives of Bellpoint Asset Management, a multimillion-dollar hedge fund headquartered in Tony, Greenwich, Connecticut. Far from underdogs, these are the over-the-top dogs, three have-everythings who now have much, much more. It's a happy holiday story for the 1%, and isn't that touching? Like a kick in the head. The threesome is getting a lump sum Powerball payment of nearly $152 million. Of course, they'll have to pay taxes on their good luck, which will subtract $48 million from their haul. That's a tax rate of about 31%, which is ironic, since hedge fund guys are used to paying a privileged special tax rate of only 15% on the big incomes they draw from their everyday speculative gambles in the magical world of hedging. This is Jim Hightower saying, to their credit, the three fortunate ones say they intend to give, quote, a significant amount of their bonanza to charity. Really? Half of it? A dollar? They declined to specify.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
You want the witness of change in the counteract? We gotta take the power back.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, earlier we were talking to Lori Wallach from her Global Trade Watch. And, you know, the reality is I'm so ticked off at the fact that you've got a German company who has an American subsidiary, I understand, who is telling the American government, you need to protect yourself from the Chinese. This is a German company telling us we need to protect ourselves from a predatory competitor. Are we that brain dead? Are we really that sold? I hope not. An AFP reported today that on Friday, and we talked about this on Friday, the U.S. Trade Commission voted unanimously that there was reasonable indication that the Chinese solar cell and panel imports into this country have harmed our industry. Congratulations, they've only figured it out after numerous companies have gone belly up. But they decided, and they're going to do something about it. So China comes out and says, you know, we're deeply concerned. After the panel ruled that they're killing us, that they've killed us. Look, Solyndra, all those other companies that went under, that's done deal. And that's my problem with a lot of our trade policy. It's reactive. I was saying months ago that the Chinese are killing us. Do something. And it's only after the harm has been done that we can do anything. Well, then what do you recover? Oh, we get to recover some. A tariff or a 25% increase in what it takes to bring it in. The damage is done. We lost the industry. They've got the market. They've got all of the other foreign markets as well because they're playing different. They're playing a completely different game than we're playing. We're playing golf and using nice ping golf clubs made in Japan or wherever they're made. And they're using machetes to chop our little clubs into pieces and our shins and our arms and legs with it. Completely different games, folks. And what bothers me is, you know, I'm waiting to see what they're going to do because it was the steelworkers who were not only on the front of the tube, the steel tube case, on the front of the tire case, but also pushing this solar case. Because that alternative energy, that renewable fuels and renewable energy sector was supposed to be that next manufacturing job, that next family-sustaining working-class job. The problem what we've got in this country is we moved to this Reagan dream of a service-based economy. And the only jobs that are paying any decent money in a quote-unquote service-based economy are people who have really high knowledge levels. The people who are working very hard to clean hotel rooms, or working very hard to bring me lunch, or working very hard to cut my grass, or working very hard to wash my car, they don't make a living in this economy. Working class people, people who use their hands, have no champions left. We need to be those champions. And you need to have a low, you need to have the ability in this country, you graduate from high school, get a job in a manufacturing plant where you're going to learn a skill. You're going to make solar panels. You're going to make whatever. And you can support your family. That's what we did in this country for years. Well, it began being destroyed in 1980 and forward. But we used to be able. I mean, my grandfather, eighth grade education, that was it. Was probably the smartest guy I know, common sense-wise, was a very street-smart guy. Nobody got anything by him. And had he the opportunity to go to finish high school, go to college, probably would have been done very, very well. Didn't have that opportunity. But he was still able, with an eighth grade education, to get a job in the tank plant to begin with. Actually, you know, he developed and he designed a couple of parts that made things easier in the tank. He won a couple of awards and stuff like that back then. But was a smart guy. Was able to use his hands. He could fix anything. He could fix any machine. Because he had the skills with his hands. Sadly, in this country, people like him, they're the ones who fall behind. Because we can always get it cheaper somewhere else. And in fact, you know, I was just talking to somebody today who said, I got it in the microwave. And she said her husband took it apart three times to fix it. And she said, I just throw it away. And that's what most people's response is. We get all this cheap junk from overseas, the microwaves that are supposed to last two or three years, and we just throw them out and get new ones. The TVs, you name it. We don't fix anything anymore. What we do is we just consume. We buy a new one. Because we don't value that knowledge of working with your hands, Jake. And, you know, I go back to this. We need to have an economy where people have the ability with the skill of their hands and the sweat of their brow and the ache of their back to make a good, solid, middle-class living where they can live the American dream. And sadly, since we've deindustrialized the entire country, sadly, that opportunity is gone.
Yesterday, I was surfing the channel. I came across, you mentioned Jennifer Granholm, the former governor of Michigan. She was on with a professor, and they were talking about the problems involving our economy. And she said, on two fronts, the government's basically doing very little. First of all, we're not protecting jobs from going overseas, and she said we're also not investing in the next level of technology. If we don't protect jobs here, those industries that could evolve with the evolution of the next technology could survive. But even if we keep them here, we're not investing in the next generation of technology.
And a perfect example of that, there were two guys who wrote books. They were Philadelphia reporters, and this is back in the 90s. They were titled America, What Went Wrong? And the books were based on that premise exactly. They were talking about telephones. And one of the examples they gave, and it's just, you mentioned it, it popped into my head. They were talking about the old push-button telephones. There was a huge plant in Chicago, employed like 3,000 people, that made these push-button telephones. Made the rotary dial telephones. As soon as the push-button telephones came in, they moved that manufacturing somewhere else. They still made the old rotary dial ones, and as soon as no one was buying that, they put that plant out of business, and they began importing the push-button ones. And the cordless, we didn't get that. Those are made somewhere else. And the cell phones, those are made somewhere else. So to your point, you know, had we been able to keep those people who were making the rotary dial phones, had you put the line in to put the push-button phones in, and then the cordless phones, and then the cell phones, had you kept those jobs here, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in. And it's exactly to your point. At least that's my thought. They can't hear nodding heads.
I agree with you. I was mesmerized by what she said, and she was on for about a half an hour. If you ever get a chance to listen to her, I mean, here's a woman from one of the states that's probably hurt even more than Pennsylvania as far as deindustrialization. Michigan, if you look at
probably.
Pennsylvania's been hurt too. 70% of our industrial base and manufacturing base has disappeared in the last 10 years. But if you look at Michigan, it is horrendous what has happened. And, you know, she went into it in detail, and it is fascinating to listen to her.
They're bulldozing entire neighborhoods. That's how bad that state has been decimated by deindustrialization.
Well, she's going to be employed at a think tank. To use her education and her experience. And I'm glad to see that this country needs people like her.
There you go. Before we take a break, I want to talk about, you know, you talk about manufacturing. Maybe the people who make Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Mercedes-Benz, they were smiling today as the news broke of how on Sunday in Japan, there was a big accident, $4 million accident, evidently, where you had 8 Ferraris, a Lamborghini, a few Mercedes-Benzes, and a Prius all got into a smash-up. Evidently, one of the Ferraris were changing lanes on the wet pavement in excess of 80 to 100 miles an hour, spun around, and everybody met each other because the little club that they had was out for a Sunday drive or whatever it is they do, and smash, bang, boom. All of that sports car wealth. I'm so broken up. I know the insurance company's not happy. 10 people were injured in the accident, and the pictures are kind of hysterical. I mean, there's part of me that goes, well, I feel bad for them. There's part of me that goes, not so much. You shouldn't have been driving 100 miles an hour, idiot. But that's why you buy one of those cars at 100 miles an hour. So there you go. Probably one of the most expensive accidents. I remember when I was driving, I actually saw an accident with a Lexus, a Mercedes-Benz SUV, a Pathfinder, and a, what was the other? I think it was a BMW-like SUV. They all mangled together right in front of me.
Mm.
And I kept going, well, good for you.
Hopefully nobody was killed.
No, they just did a whole lot of damage. Whole lot of damage. Anyway, did you see this story that they've evidently found a planet that is somewhere where life can live, where it's habitable? It's only about 600 light years away. It is Kepler-22b, about 2.4 times the size of Earth.
Wow.
And it orbits a sun-like star every 290 days. Now, understand, a light year is about 6 trillion miles. So that's only about 600 of those. And how they saw it, I have no idea, but evidently they've found this planet. It's going to be full of life. So when we screw this planet up enough, we can start missions out there. And can you imagine taking the kids on that trip? Can you imagine? Are we there yet?
We don't have to sleep, what, for 100 years?
I mean, you're looking at 3,600 trillion miles or something like that.
My. Well, there's only one problem. We've decimated the space program, pretty much.
Well, there you go.
Not important enough. We need tax breaks.
How very nice. Well, we didn't need to get there anyway. You know, it wasn't that big of a deal. And it's not like I'm going to get there in my lifetime, so the heck with them.
Well, there are people who believe that it is very possible, possibly Mars, certainly in the moon, you could live under the right conditions. That's not incomprehensible in the next 50 years.
Well, thank you for that, Ray Bradbury. All righty. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back after this.
You're listening listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We're out today with Mike, veteran, volunteer, and adventurer.
I tell a lot of people I'm a gray-haired teenager. Because I act like one.
Mike loves life, and Capital Blue Cross helps him live it to the fullest. So he's a big fan.
I'm a senior Blue PPO member. I have recommended Capital Blue Cross to 27 Medicare beneficiaries this year alone.
Mike must really care about his friends.
Capital Blue Cross has made the Medicare process easier, and they're very sincere, and they want to help you.
Mike, we've got you covered.
The bottom line is, if you care more, you do more.
For customer service, call 888-340-3978. That's 888-340-3978. Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, with extended hours October 15th through February 14th. Senior Blue PPO is issued by Capital Advantage Insurance Company, a Medicare Advantage organization with a Medicare contract. Capital Blue Cross and Capital Advantage Insurance Company are independent licensees of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So a day of mourning here at the program as the Herman Cain train has derailed. I guess he's suspending. And again, you know, I love the whole idea of we're just going to suspend our campaign so we can get some federal money, but we're fiscally responsible. We care about government. I'm still trying to figure that out. Anyway, I've got Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service on the line. Victoria, what's going on in D.C.?
Oh, it's all action in Washington, D.C. Yes.
They built a wooden structure. The Occupy people got everybody all up in arms.
They built a 15-foot wooden structure on stilts that was designed not to be permanent, or so they said. But the police didn't see it. That's why they said they didn't need a permit, because you don't need one in certain parks. But the park police didn't see it that way. They said, nah, not so much. Not only looks permanent to us, and you need a permit. So it's got to go. So they had a long dispute about that all day. And then around 6-something p.m., the police said, anyway, it's dangerous, so it's got to go.
Right. No tear gas, no rubber bullets, no beanbags.
No tear gas, no rubber bullets, just general shouting and, you know, shouting and stuff. And there was pepper spray was held, but it wasn't used on anybody. I mean, people shouted at each other a fair bit, but it was just general, you know, people getting cross with each other after weeks and weeks and weeks of this and of peaceful coexistence. But it had come to a head, and they didn't want to go, and the police wanted them to go. And eventually the police went in, and they were hanging on to, I shouldn't be laughing, I'm sorry, but it's quite funny. But they were hanging on to the roofs, so the police went in and sort of plucked them off the roofs one by one.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, there you go. So the law and order has prevailed, I guess, there with the wooden structure. Are you upset about the Cain train derailing? I'm in mourning.
Yes.
Because I was really hoping when we go to New Hampshire that we would have the opportunity to see the man, the myth, the legend. But maybe not.
I wanted to be harassed by him.
To get the evidently the big check? No.
I wanted something. I wanted a settlement or something.
I'm not going to let it go. I'm going to leave that with love. Just going to leave it right there. The president, gave a big speech today about his payroll tax?
Well, not so much a big speech, but he came into the briefing room and got riled up. Spoke to reporters or spoke to the American people with reporters in the room and said Republicans have got to extend the payroll tax cut. You know, it's the right thing to do, and it stimulates hiring and spending, and it's important. And this is the only kind of tax cut that the Republicans are apparently against. They're in favor of tax cuts for the wealthy, but how come it is when it's for the middle class that suddenly they get this weird feeling about it? What's up with that?
Well, they have this longing and this love of Social Security that they've been so, for the last 70 years, trying to save Social Security. Listen to them. They'll tell you. even though everything they do is the opposite, and they've been dead set against Social Security from the beginning, but now that it plays to their advantage, we need to save Social Security.
Here's his quotation. Now, I know many Republicans have sworn an oath never to raise taxes as long as they live. How can it be the only time there's a catch is when it comes to raising taxes on middle-class families? How can you fight tooth and nail to protect high-end tax breaks for the wealthiest Americans and yet barely lift a finger to prevent taxes going up for 160 million Americans who really need the help?
Yep.
It doesn't make sense.
And you know what else doesn't make sense? You know, the Republicans are supposed to be the great defenders. They'll tell you anyway of not raising taxes. Go back to the tax reform bill of 86. All of you folks who are unemployed right now, anybody who's ever been unemployed since 1986, thank Ronald Reagan for taxing unemployment compensation benefits. Because that's when it started. All the folks who are collecting an unemployment check right now because your job went overseas or because of the great Republican recession, it disappeared. You're paying taxes because of Reagan and the tax reform bill of 86. So thank them all. But now that, you know, the president's got this idea, we've got to raise taxes. And where's Grover Norquist? I thought he was a great defender of not raising taxes.
Yeah, well, if you want to watch something wriggle, you want to watch Grover Norquist in action. Because he's a wriggler.
Yes, he is. He's something else. And I got to be honest with you, I'm not all that thrilled with how they're paying for it. I like the way it's being put into the economy. It's getting right into people's checks. Unlike the Bush money that they handed out, which was the most inefficient way of getting money back into people, but politically the most bang for the buck, because you knew your Bush prize was coming. He sent you a letter saying, look for the Bush prize, it's coming. And then your Bush prize came, and you were excited, and you were happy. I got my Bush prize, yeah! But with the Obama tax cut, it's just in your check. And, well, if you remember early polling numbers, most people didn't even know they got it.
That's right, they didn't know they got it. And that was probably a mistake to do it that way.
Well, I mean, again, it's the difference between governing and politicking. The Republicans are much better on every front at playing politics than Democrats will ever be. They should probably give it up. Supreme Court, interesting decision, I guess, going to decide.
Yeah, they decided to take an interesting case whether a Colorado man who touched and berated then-Vice President Cheney can sue the Secret Service for arresting him. They decided to decide whether he can sue. An appeals court said Stephen Howard of Golden, Colorado, could proceed with his suit that his arrest violated his free speech rights. This was an incident at a Beaver Creek shopping center in 2006. Howard Cheney that the administration's policies in Iraq were disgusting, to which Cheney said, thank you. Howard then touched Cheney's shoulder with his open hand, which he later denied, when Secret Service agent Virgil Gus Reichel confronted him. So then these two agents said the arrest was warranted because Doyle had overheard this guy on his cell phone saying he intended to ask Cheney how many kids he's killed today and because he'd lied about touching Cheney. So Howard's the guy was handcuffed and charged with harassment, but the charges were later dropped.
Right.
Anyway, so the case went on, and it's a question of whether the agents violated his rights against unreasonable seizure, but that his suit alleging a violation of his First Amendment rights could go forward. And the agent told the Supreme Court that agents must be protected from these suits in order to vigilantly protect public officials. And basically the Supreme Court has said, no, you know, we're going to decide whether he can sue the Secret Service. We're going to listen to this case.
That's interesting because, you know, I got to be honest, my reaction to it is you've got to protect those people. They're in a position where they're surrounded by folks like that. And there's part of me that's surprised that the Secret Service heard him say the word killed and him touching Cheney or being close to him and that guy not ending up in a black site somewhere.
It's interesting. Yeah. Well, they can be very temperate. Secret Service can be very temperate.
And I think I want them to be. I don't, you know, if I'm the president, I want somebody who's going to take a bullet for me and make sure that nobody, you know, nobody comes after me.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Interesting. The guy's from Golden, Colorado.
Yeah.
I just talked about a story a couple of days ago from Golden, Colorado, and it bugged me for days. The school district out there in Golden, Colorado, home of the Coors Brewery, where the right-wing, crazy, insaniac people produce beer. The school district out there is sending report cards home to every student from kindergarten through eighth grade with advertisements on their report card. They are selling ads on the report cards.
Wow.
Welcome to conservative world.
Wow.
And talking about conservative world, let's destroy all labor law, I guess. And I got to be honest, I was shocked when the Republican on the NLRB didn't resign last Friday. I was shocked. I thought they had him bought off. But just the mere appearance of him being bought off has some concern.
Yeah, seeing that there's a watchdog. This is Dave Berry, the Inspector General, and he's concerned about accusations that the lone Republican might have been offered an enticement to resign. He told the newspaper The Hill his office is aware of these allegations that the Labor Wars lone Republican Brian Hayes might have been offered something of value to leave his position. And he says, we're very concerned about the allegations. We will take the appropriate steps to address them. And he says, if the substance, it could warrant an investigation by his office, but he won't confirm or deny that there's an investigation underway. And there have been reports of special interest organizations and individuals calling on Hayes to resign precisely to incapacitate the board. That's the whole point.
Right.
And this letter written by Representative George Miller, Democrat of California, went to Hayes last month about his resignation threat, says the open calls to resign, followed by the threats you allegedly have made, raise the specter of private requests as well. I am concerned that any decision to resign prematurely will be the result of objectionable motives or improper influence.
Yep.
So it's not just the watchdog. You also have Representative George Miller, Democrat of California, who is concerned about this, and that's really what prompted this whole thing.
And this is one of those instances where we should be investigating this fully, and anybody involved with any type of impropriety should be put in jail. You know, I go back to that prescription drug plan that got rammed through. You want to talk about rammed through? That got rammed through, and that Louisiana congressman, what was his name, Billy Townsend?
Yes.
He was one of the key people who pushed it through, and it was almost immediately, in the middle of his term, he quits, and now he's the head lobbyist for the people who wanted that drug bill. I mean, he should be in jail.
Pure coincidence.
No, not coincidence. He should be in jail.
I know.
But, you know, and again, any of this stuff, I think those people should be in jail. We should be slamming that rotating revolving door shut and start locking people
up. That's what Abramoff says.
I can't argue with him either. I mean, there's a guy who knows. I guess takes one to know the ins and outs there. And lastly, the White House is pushing for Richard Cordray.
Yeah, they started this offensive last night to try to get Richard Cordray confirmed as the new director to run the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the new agency that needs to get up and running. And the Senate will vote on his confirmation on Thursday. So they had yet another a background briefing with reporters today. They started this push yesterday. They're targeting senators in seven states. So they had a background briefing with reporters today saying that, the Republican demands won't fly. Most of the demands they've made are ones that have been unacceptable because they undermine what's so important about the consumer watchdog. And they say our focus right now is on the vote on Thursday. They're saying that the Republican demands are basically impossible. Now, Republicans are complaining that the White House hasn't dealt with them directly on this issue. And the reason the White House hasn't dealt with them directly on the issue, the White House would say, is that the White House thinks that the Republican objections are basically non-starters. And that the Republicans aren't dealing fairly because 44 Senate Republicans have already signed a letter vowing to filibuster anybody unless Democrats agree to huge concessions.
Yeah, basically giving away with the baby with the bathwater.
Right.
And, you know, again, you know, it's at this point, why bother talking to me? You know where they're going to be. Now, do they need, is this an up or down vote, or do they need 60 votes to get this guy confirmed?
They need 60 votes for this.
It's not going to go anywhere.
No, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. They need 60 votes for this. And in order for this agency to do a lot of the things that it needs to do,
It has to, the way it was set up, it has to have its director in place. It doesn't have any teeth until it has a director.
And it needs a budget, which I'm sure they will starve and make it as ineffective as most of the other agencies that are supposed to be overseeing a lot of the things that aren't being done right now. Nice. Very nice. Always good news when I talk to you, Victoria.
I love to cheer you up.
Thanks so much. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Appreciate it. And now to find out what's going on Sesame Street, what do you got for us tonight, Muppet?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Last week, the Obama administration came up with a proposal on tax breaks for the middle class. It was soundly defeated by the Republicans. The Democrats have come up with a new proposal, some of it pretty surprising. The latest Democratic proposal would drop the idea of extending the tax breaks to employers, instead lowering to 3.1% the workers' tax rate that is set to increase by 2 percentage points at year's end unless Congress takes some action. The big change, differing from the last plan, Democrats would pay for the cost by proposing cuts to non-health mandatory programs that were under consideration for reductions by the congressional supercommittees. They will call for a temporary surtax on millionaires. I repeat, a temporary surtax on millionaires rather than a permanent one, and will scale back the 3.25% surtax that was part of last week's plan. Democrats will also call for means testing for certain governmental benefits, the unemployed insurance, food stamps program to ensure if affluent individuals no longer receive compensation from the government. Very much a change of direction for the Democrats. Will it be politically risky? Only time will tell. It does appear that the Democrats are willing to venture into virgin territory. I'm not quite sure how that's going to go with the public, but at least the Democrats are trying. We talked about earlier, Rick, I know you talked about some of the obscene salaries of some of the CEOs. AFL-CIO Executive Pay Watch brought some comparisons. They looked up some of the salaries of your average teachers and some of the obscene, again, some of the very, very obscene examples of executive salary increases. And the study came to the conclusion that the average teacher today earns about $55,000 a year. However, there are at least 75 CEOs that earn as much in one day, every day, 365 days a year. According to Executive Pay Watch, the CEO who ranked number 75, there were 75 CEOs who made more money. This man's name is David Cote of Honeywell. He was paid $20,154,000 for a daily rate of $55,216. In other words, the 75th best compensated CEO in the country on a daily basis made more than the average teacher in this country. The CEO at the top of the heap, Philip Dahlman of Viacom, was paid $84,515,000. Third grade teacher, for the author of this article, supposedly taught us to compute averages. This is what the averages came out to. So I can tell you that Dahlman earns a daily average of about $231,000 each and every day. I mean, we all too often, when we get into...
He deserves it.
No, he doesn't.
It's a meritocracy. He's a captain of industry. He's a man among men. He pulled himself up by his bootstraps. He's the guy. He's got a mousetrap that's better than everybody else's.
At the end of the day, Rick, you got to question our value system. I mean, these teachers, we demonize them, especially when you get into arguments about local taxes going up. Often they're demonized. You just have to question our value system. After looking at some of these CEOs' obscene salaries, you just shake your head and say, wow, do we really value teachers? And the answer all too often is
no.
Not to the degree that we should.
No, you've caught it. We don't. We don't value them at all. As a society, we allow them to get beat up. As a society, we allow the right wing and the Republicans and even some Democrats to go after them and say, oh, well, you know, we've got bad teachers. No, 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 no. What we've got is overbearing administrators. What we've got is we got people leaving the craft because they're hamstrung by No Child Left Behind and teaching to the test. That's what's happened. We're taking the professionalism out of teaching. We're turning teaching into factory work.
You hardly ever hear about the discussions of how valuable teachers are. But yet, how many times do we question these obscene salaries? Forget about how many jobs they eliminate.
Oh,
you don't even
jealous.
Get into that.
You're being jealous they earned it.
But as a, you know, as a society, I mean, it's, well, we're beating this to death, but I think we've made our point. I think somewhere along the line, we have to readjust our thinking. It's that time of year, Rick. Jobs with Justice is now accepting nominations for the greediest, most cold-hearted CEO or politician of the year 2011 in their 11th annual Scrooge of the Year contest. Last year's Scrooge of the Year was none other than Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell for leading the Senate in blocking almost all legislation from passing, especially laws that would help working people. Other past winners of the dubious honor include Walmart, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and Wall Street executives who broke our economy. We'll be giving you, if you're interested in giving your ideas as to who should be winning, I just go to their website.
Hold on. Are we voting on it, or did McConnell already win?
No, he won last year.
Oh, okay.
He won last year, and they'll be looking soon for volunteers. You can go to their website, jobswithjustice.com, and they will tell you exactly what you need to do to get into that. And I'm certainly going to vote. I'd have to, there's plenty of candidates this year. Rick, I'm going to have to give it careful thought, but I will be voting.
All right. So you can go to jwj.org to get to the Jobs with Justice website. There you go. Let's take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
USA, drowning in crafts and lies. Save the USA, and resume those times of mine. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job and join the people.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
In 1897, miners at collieries throughout northeastern Pennsylvania's anthracite coal region had enough. Conditions were grueling and life was difficult. Miners were frequently cheated out of pay, overcharged for supplies, some they never wanted or received, forced to live in captive company-owned towns, shop at overpriced company-owned stores, even mandated to use the company doctor since fees were deducted automatically from the miner's pay. This, combined with mine owners forcing longer unpaid hours and the Anti-Immigrant Campbell Act of 1897, taxing mine owners for the use of non-native labor, drove miners to strike. Spontaneously starting in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, workers marched north to get other miners to join in the struggle. Their demands were modest, a 10-cent pay raise and a reduction in the cost of gunpowder. They also wanted the freedom to shop in non-company-owned stores of their choosing and see a doctor not owned by the coal company. As the miners moved northward toward Hazleton, mine owners, determined to crush the workers' protest, sent their company-paid police force and strike breakers. Local law enforcement was also on the side of mine owners. Luzerne County Sheriff James Martin, a former mine foreman, deputized 102 local men, arming them with Winchester rifles and sidearms. The group of some 400 miners marching peacefully and unarmed in rows of fours moved onward toward Latimer. Stephen Urich, joining the group outside of Hazleton, taking with him the American flag, shouted, "We have nothing to worry about because we have the American flag to protect us." Within hours and a hail of Winchester bullets, Stephen Urich was gunned down in cold blood, his beloved American flag drenched in his blood and the blood of those who lay murdered and wounded. Eyewitnesses said the sheriff and his hired killers mowed the men down like grass. More than 20 men were murdered on that September day, and more than 50 were wounded, many shot in the back in Labor's Forgotten Massacre. The sheriff and his murderous band were tried for their part in the Latimer Massacre and found not guilty of murdering 20 unarmed peaceful demonstrators. Lest we never forget, or as the wife of a miner whose life was stolen from him told her children, "You can forgive, but you can't forget." This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, that's the best place to go. Archives for the last several years. You can listen to any of our past programs. Or if you've got a smartphone, get our Stitcher app, and you can take the program on the go. Well, it is the holiday season, and these shoplifters are gearing up. And the people over at Adweek are talking about the 10 most ripped-off items during the holiday season. Now, they claim that 70% of people who get caught shoplifting say they didn't plan on shoplifting. Didn't plan on it. It just, well, you know, I had it in my hand. I just said, oh, the heck with it. I'm going to go. So kind of interesting, the 10 top items that people steal, which really we thieves, you really need to work on it. The number 10 item that we steal, evidently athletic shoes, Nikes. We pretty much the big footwear theft item. And I guess I can see how you didn't plan on stealing them. You walked in, you put them on your feet, and you tried to walk out. I can understand. You forgot they were there. I can see that. The number 9 is Chanel number 5. Hey, you got to understand, you know, big these expensive fragrances. They're hot items for good great gifts for Christmas, and nothing better than a ripped off gift for Christmas. The number 8 is Let's Rock Elmo. You know, I can see that. You just said, you know, I really need this $7 or $8 doll, so I'm going to risk going to jail for this little thing. Reminds me of a guy I worked with. A couple of days, I think he was a serial kleptomaniac. I think he really had a problem, but. Coming out of work one day, had a $7 Pokemon doll just tucked under his shirt. And the supervisor said, what do you got under your shirt? He goes, oh, yeah, you caught me. Handed him this $7 little Pokemon doll. And I'm going, you just lost a $50,000 a year job for a $7 Pokemon. I hope it was worth it. Anyway, the number 7 most ripped off item, Polo by Ralph Lauren. Along with the Tommy Hilfiger thing. So again, you know, some of the polo shirts, you got the Chanel number 5 going for you, clothing. Axe deodorant was number 6. I guess people don't want to smell while they're in jail. The Gillette Mach 4 razor was number 5. So people are ripping off razors. I'm going, I just don't shave that much. If I can't afford to buy it, just don't shave. The number 4 thing, which I didn't know you could get, the iPhone 4. They're saying is the number 4 most ripped off item. I'm going, good luck getting it out of their hands. They also claim that, you know, pretty much all electronic gadgetry is up for the sticky finger award. In fact, the one group that this Al Novick group who, you know, kind of follows this stuff says that this holiday season, they're going to see 100,000 laptops walk away. They had number 3, electronic tools, number 2, Jameson liquor, and number 1, meat. That's right, meat, the most stolen item this holiday season. And I think back to our friend in Carlisle who got caught twice stealing meat. So the most stolen item, meat. What could be more American than stealing meat? Hope for your sake, thieves of meat, it was produced right here at home, and it wasn't that Mexican meat or some other place. Since we're not allowed to know the country of origin. Anyway, have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow, as every night, 9 to midnight, right here at the Rick Smith Show. Something on your mind, question, comment, rick@therickSmithShow.com. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the USA.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.